You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Sit down like Firefly. That's why I had to say goodbye. Now sit down like Firefly. So she's gone, gone, gone.
This is Mikey Mason, geek, fanboy, comedy rock star. I'm the She Don't Like Firefly guy, and you are listening to the Flopcast.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast, episode 299.
It's time to talk about dead people.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hi. I'm trying to be enthusiastic.
You're strangely enthusiastic about dead people today.
The show always makes me sad when we get to this. So I'm doing my best. I'm not going to get sad. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good. We're going to get through this together. Yeah, this is our, I think, fourth annual memorial show.
Deathisode, if you will.
We're going to look at everybody that we lost in the year 2017. But first, we have some business to take care of, and that is, the mayor is here, we should say.
Welcome, the mayor.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a tradition of joining in on these memorial episodes, so here I am again.
You have a tradition of getting annoyed with how long the memorial show takes, which last year it was our longest show ever.
Yeah, well, I'm not a veteran podcaster like the two of you, and so these long recording sessions really take a lot out of me.
Yes.
I kind of feel like after withstanding last year, I'm ready for anything.
We're all hoping it won't take as long as last year.
What was it, like 3 or 4 hours long last
year? It seemed like it.
The final recording, the show was 1 hour, 53 minutes. But that's edited.
Right.
Yeah, we may have talked for 7, 8, 9 hours. I don't know. I don't remember. We'll see how it goes. But before we get to the memorial show, Cornflake, this is the end of your 1990s-themed National Whatever Days at long last. What do you have themed around the year 1999 for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
1999 was the year that a television show called Who Wants to Be a Millionaire started to encourage us to phone a friend if we weren't sure about the answer to a trivia question.
That started in 99?
Yes.
Okay, with Regis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Regis in that first year. And I didn't know this, but I discovered today that he holds the Guinness Book of World Records for most hours standing in front of a television camera.
Yeah, you know, I've heard that.
And it was only a year or two later that, I guess, Meredith Vieira took over for just about a decade. And then there have been a few hosts.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's still going, right?
But yeah, that's what surprised me.
Yeah, well, it's not a primetime network thing anymore. It's settled into a more normal game show type schedule, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it was like a phenomenon at first. It was the biggest show on TV. And then they went crazy and they said, well, let's show it 4 or 5 nights a week then.
And we'll have a daytime version.
Yeah, yes. Plus the daytime version. So, yeah, they were really working poor Regis there for a while. And then everybody got sick of it and it all calmed down.
Right, exactly. And that's why I was astonished to discover that, I guess, since Meredith Vieira, there have been a few other hosts. It seems to change every 1 to 2 years now.
Yeah, that doesn't matter because nobody watches.
I just remember how huge it was when it was first on the air.
It was strangely compelling at first. I saw it a few times myself, and I hope I never see it again.
Yeah, I think I watched it, you know, for a good stretch there at the beginning. And, I mean, I've never watched, you know, Regis' daytime show, but I find Regis very compelling and I like to watch him.
Regis is a great broadcaster, and that's why he's had the career that he's had. But yeah, we especially enjoyed him just as a guest on the Letterman show.
Yeah, he was really funny on that.
Yeah, he was always great on Letterman.
You know, when they went to syndication with this show, they thought, we need to pick someone that people are going to like more.
Mm.
And I haven't watched it since Regis was hosting the show.
Who'd they get? Robbie Rist?
They should have. But we ended the 90s with Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
So how come we're not millionaires yet?
We didn't want it bad enough, evidently.
All right, you know, let's keep Whatever Day super short today because this show's going to be too long already. Well, thank you for this long, long run of year-themed Whatever Days. Because this has been 20 weeks.
Yeah, it's been hard work, I'm sure.
I'm happy to go back to our original format.
We did every year of the 80s and every year of the 90s for the past 20 episodes. Yeah, we're going back to National Whatever Day Classic next week.
Classic edition, yes.
That'll be good. This week, however, yeah, this is our memorial show, and I did a version of this just a few months ago at Dragon Con.
That kind of bridged the gap between last year's show and this year's show.
Yeah, we're settling into a schedule where at Dragon Con, I do like from September through August. And for our purposes, we do the calendar year. Mm-hmm. We're going January through December 2017. And it's a pretty long list, as always. So we'll try to move quickly. We've categorized things once again. And the first category is TV and movies and stuff like that, which is the biggest category.
Yes.
Because that's all we care about.
Right. We're very pop culture centric here on the podcast.
Yeah. So this should be, I think these shows are nice. I know these shows are popular. People like these memorial shows.
That's good.
Yeah. So let's do it. And we've got some of the bigger names up front on the list, and then we'll kind of lightning round and blaze through some people a little faster as we go so that we don't just collapse.
Right. Go through them quickly, but so that they can still have their due.
Oh, yeah. We're going to try to mention a lot of people. We go pretty deep on this show, and we cover a lot of people that probably get overlooked by most other shows that do memorial shows like this. So let's do it. And also, anytime if we hit somebody on the list that we have actually seen in person, or if you've actually met somebody in person as well,
mm-hmm.
we like to know. And we all do a shot, right?
Yes.
I was going to say, is there drinking involved?
That was the idea we had last year, but then we didn't do it. And now this year, once again, we're all drinking right now, we should say, heavily. But once again,
I'm hitting the water.
Our beverages of choice are water and coffee.
Yeah, hitting the coffee sauce.
So we'll do a shot of coffee anytime we see someone that we've seen in person or perhaps even met. And we're going to start that way right now because the first person I have on my list is Adam West, who I never met, but I saw him many times at conventions and whatnot over the years. He was just in Boston this year. Adam died in early June,
mm-hmm.
and he was at a show here in Massachusetts just a few weeks before that.
Wow.
This, I just saw him in 2017, and it was Adam West and Burt Ward together.
Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman and Robin together. I saw them do that a couple times over the years, and I think I saw Adam speak by himself
mm-hmm.
once or twice. And Adam was 88.
Yeah, he lived a good long life.
And especially, he had such a renaissance later in life.
Yeah.
Whereas he had some rough years, kind of. There's a rough patch post-Batman and pre- Everybody Loves Batman through the 70s and 80s, I think. He had some lean years, but then he just became embraced by everyone as just a legend. And as goofy as it is, we love the old Batman Adam West show. There's a museum exhibit running right now in Los Angeles devoted to the Batman Adam West TV series, and it's supposed to be spectacular. Our friend John Drew from the Batcave podcast actually made a trip out from the East Coast to the West Coast to be at the opening of the exhibit. He was hanging out with Burt Ward. It looks like a very nice tribute to Adam West and to the series, and that's running for the next couple of months, I think.
What was his final role?
Well, his last Batman role was the Batman versus Two-Face cartoon, which we just mentioned last week, I think, because I was on Earth Station DCU talking about it. But yeah, he was playing Batman, his old Batman character.
Yeah, along with Burt Ward and Julie Newmar.
Yes.
And William Shatner played Two-Face in that.
Yeah, and it was great. So yeah, Adam did a lot of, I know he did voice work on Family Guy. He was the mayor on Family Guy for the last several years. So a lot of younger people know him mainly from Family Guy. So yeah, he had a nice late in life career going for the great Adam West. Now, Adam was 88, but he's just a kid compared to June Foray.
I couldn't believe it. I knew she was up there, but I had no idea that she made it all the way to 99.
June was 99.
It didn't make us any less sad that it was her
well,
time to go.
Sure.
Yeah. You kind of think of her as forever young because of the voice work that she did.
Oh, and she could still do like kids' voices when she needed to. And we can't even do the list right now because nobody could do that. That just goes on and on. You know, Rocky the Squirrel, probably her biggest part, but
sure.
Natasha... Cindy Lou Who.
That was the big one for me. I didn't realize until I read that she was Cindy Lou Who.
Yeah, she just had the one line in that,
in that show. Why, Santa Claus? Why? Why?
But she did looping a lot of times for children in live action stuff.
Yeah, didn't we see that on an episode of Twilight
Zone? Yeah, there's a Twilight Zone where this young girl starts talking, and it's, oh, that's June Foray. For some reason, I had to have June come in and loop all this girl's dialogue. She was amazing, and obviously, you know, worked in radio, worked in TV and movies, and I saw June Foray in person once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I didn't get to meet her, but I saw June speak at San Diego Comic-Con, and this would have been in the late 90s or early 2000s.
Close enough. Can I take a drink on your behalf?
Go right ahead.
Okay,
have a shot of coffee in honor of the legendary June Foray. Actually, next on the list is someone else that I saw in person once also.
Wow.
You were going to put your coffee down?
I'm
going to take another sip right now.
Don't you dare let go of that chicken mug. Because I also saw in San Diego once Miguel Ferrer.
Oh,
yep.
And this was a guy that did so much. He was only 61. People know him from RoboCop, and they know him from Twin Peaks.
And he was on the whole run of the revival of Twin Peaks, too.
Yes.
Which was released after he passed away.
Yeah. Just he's sort of a character actor, I guess.
He can
just do these cool little roles in a million different things. Did a lot of comic book related stuff. He was a comic book guy.
Mm-hmm.
And
was he in Seduction of the Innocents?
Yes, that's when I saw him at San Diego. He was performing with Seduction of the Innocents. Seduction of the Innocent is a band. It was a rock band made up of comic book creators. And the front man was Bill Mumy from Lost in Space, mm-hmm. you know, who also has written some comics and stuff. But Max Allen Collins, who wrote Road to Perdition mm-hmm. and wrote, you know, Dick Tracy and a lot of stuff like that, he was the keyboardist. And Steve Lealoa, he's an anchor. He inked Fables.
Yeah,
you'd know his work from Fables. Yeah, he was the bass player, I believe. And Miguel Ferrer was the drummer.
I know what Fables is. I'm going to take a drink.
If you're looking for any excuse now.
And it's not even alcoholic.
I need my coffee. But yeah, one of the years that I was at San Diego Comic-Con, Seduction of the Innocent was doing a concert, so I got to see Miguel play the drums live.
That's neat.
With Will Robinson.
What kind of music did they make?
But that night they were doing a lot of covers, a lot of like 60s rock songs and stuff, the stuff that those guys grew up with. But they did a whole album of original music about comic books. They wrote comic book themed songs.
Oh.
And they put out an album in the early 90s called The Golden Age.
Kind of like Nashville Superman?
Yeah, similar to that dude we met that made a whole album of country songs about Superman. Yeah, Seduction of the Innocent did a whole record of comic book songs. They did a song called King Jack that was just a tribute to Jack Kirby.
Neat.
Yeah, Miguel, he was in that 1990s Justice League pilot, that really stupid, ridiculous pilot that leaked out onto the bootleg market. He was the villain in that, the Weatherman.
Of course.
And then he also played the actual Weather Wizard, the real DC supervillain. In Superman the Animated Series, and he did a lot of voices mm-hmm. in a lot of different superhero cartoons and stuff. He did so much cool stuff. Also, in about 10 years ago, whenever that was, they did that new version of Bionic Woman.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the boss. He was.
Yeah.
I don't think they called him Oscar Goldman, but he was the Oscar Goldman type mm-hmm. character, like her government liaison. And the new Bionic Woman was Miguel Ferrer.
I had completely forgotten about that.
Yes, well, that show was not around for long. It wasn't bad, though, and he was certainly good on it. In fact, I grouped together on the list because speaking of Oscar Goldman, the boss, the original $6 million man in Bionic Woman, played by Richard Anderson, who also died this year at 91.
Oh.
And Cornflake, have a sip of coffee. I saw Richard Anderson in person. I'm 4 for 4 on this list.
Yeah, you really front loaded it with the people that you've seen in person.
Yeah, well, Richard Anderson was at Super Mega Fest once here in Massachusetts because they had Lindsay Wagner and Richard Anderson and the woman who played a Fembot, whose mm-hmm. name I forgot. But yeah, he was the boss of all the bionic people back in the 70s.
Some good coffee.
And,
he had some really interesting blazers.
Oh, you could tell what decade Richard Anderson was in. The big glasses.
Yeah. Yeah, I always liked Oscar a lot on those shows.
Weird trivia about his part is that he was playing the same character on two different shows that at one point were running on two different networks.
Oh, so is that like in the Guinness Book of World Records or something?
Let's say yes, it is.
It's just a cool piece of trivia.
How about Mary Tyler Moore?
Yeah.
Who was 80, but that was one that just kind of crushes everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, come on. I never saw Mary Tyler Moore in person. You can finally put your coffee down.
I'm sure there will be more opportunities to drink coffee.
I was more a fan of her work on the Dick Van Dyke Show as opposed to Mary Tyler Moore Show, which I watched them both, but
I wasn't familiar with either of those shows,
yeah,
but
they were
I was
before your time.
I was familiar with Mary Tyler Dot.
Which
What's
is
that?
That was Dot from the Animaniacs' tribute, I guess you say, to Mary Tyler Moore. She had a song. One of the lyrics to it was, "Don't throw your hat up in the air, because what might land is a Frigidaire."
Yes. I think they have a statue of Mary Tyler Moore throwing the hat in Minneapolis.
Yeah, one of those like TV Land statues, like the Bewitched statue in Salem.
Yeah, we have the Elizabeth Montgomery statue in Salem, and we saw the Ralph Cramden statue, I believe, in Manhattan once by the bus station.
Yeah.
And I've never seen it, even though I've been to Minneapolis many times, but I think they have a statue of her throwing the hat. We'll have to go find it sometime.
Yeah, why didn't you find that instead of the giant blue chicken?
I was busy visiting the giant blue chicken. I could not visit every statue in Minneapolis.
All right, maybe next year.
In the same day. Richard Hatch was 71. And this is not the Survivor Richard Hatch. This is the Battlestar Galactica Richard Hatch.
Now, I have seen him in person. You probably have too.
Oh, yes. Yes, many
times.
Having
a drink?
Yes. Yeah, you got to drink like 2 or 3 whole cups of coffee right now. Richard Hatch was an institution at DragonCon. Oh. He was always there every year.
Well, he used to come to Gallifrey 1 as well, and this was before Battlestar Galactica came back, because he was kind of pitching his own reboot or sequel for a while.
Even in the late 90s, I saw him in San Diego with that little teaser film, which he produced himself. He didn't own the rights to Galactica. He just spent his own money on a project that he did not have the rights to and gathered up as much of the original cast as he could and made a very cool-looking clip of like, here's the Galactica revival, let's do it. And he was just trying to build up enthusiasm about it and actually try to get the project rolling. And that's how passionate he was about Galactica. And then it was
very admirable.
It was several years later when Galactica actually did come back.
But it's nice that they gave him a part that actually wound up being quite significant throughout the series.
Yeah, they could have given him a little cute cameo or a simple part and leave it at that. But he really got to act on a level that he never did on the old show. That was such a nuanced, complex character. He was great on that. And as recently as 2016, he was at DragonCon every year. Martin Landau was 89, which you heard him mentioned on the Flopcast recently because we played that sci-fi TV 1977 panel.
Yes.
And Martin Landau was one of the stars of Space 1999 back in the 70s.
Yeah. He's in my favorite Woody Allen movie, which is Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Oh, right. And then Ed Wood.
Ed Wood, of course, where he played
Bela Lugosi. Right?
Yeah, he did.
Won the Oscar for his Bela Lugosi performance. Let's see. Let's keep moving, because, man, we've barely started. Robert Guillaume.
Oh.
Benson.
Also 89.
I loved Benson. That was a show that I watched religiously.
Well, how many times has Benson come up on our show?
Yeah.
A lot.
Quite a bit.
He was the man.
We loved Benson.
Yeah.
I mean, I was watching Soap back when I was a kid, and then he played Benson on Soap, and then they spun him off into his own show.
Yeah, Soap was off my radar, but I've seen some episodes since then. And every time Benson has come around on reruns on some cable channel, we always try to watch it.
And Benson holds up. I mean, as much as it's a goofy 80s sitcom, but they did some good stuff on Benson, and the performances are outstanding.
They really are, and the characters and their interactions are very funny. Yeah, his love-hate relationship with Krause and his butting heads with Clayton.
Well, he's one of those actors that he's very funny in his own right, but he's also one of those perfect guys to stick in the middle and surround with crazy people and just watch him react. And they would just have a long shot, several seconds, just showing his face, just looking disgusted. And that would get a huge laugh.
So relatable.
He was so great at that. Then he did stuff later. He was one of the voices of the Lion King.
He was
Rafiki, wasn't he?
I don't remember. I know he did something in Lion King.
And he was in a Phantom of the Opera on Broadway for a while too.
Oh, yeah, he was a singer and a theater guy.
Yeah, I remember him. I mean, he would sing now and then in Benson, and really had a great voice.
I know what your favorite episode of Benson is.
My favorite episode of Benson was a Christmas episode where the plot lasts about 15 minutes, and then they spend the rest of the time around the piano singing Christmas carols.
It's literally...
They take a cue from the Muppets?
I don't know.
The last 10 minutes of the show, it's just the whole cast standing around a piano singing together.
That's beautiful.
And Krause sings the original German version of Silent Night.
Oh.
Benson sings Oh Holy Night.
It's amazing.
It's awesome.
All right, I think we're gonna trickle off into some probably lesser known people now, but some people that we certainly want to recall. And how about we have Francine York, who was 80 years old. That's not a name you might know, but she has some cool credits for our purposes. And speaking of Batman 66, she played a character named Lydia Limpet, who was the assistant to the Bookworm.
Must have been a wacky villain.
One of the villains, Bookworm, was played by Roddy McDowall.
Oh.
Yeah, she was Lydia Limpet on those Bookworm episodes of Batman. And she also appeared in a few episodes of Jason of Star Command.
Oh, I know you love that show.
As Queen Medusa.
Cool.
So that's pretty good. Francine York. Tony Rosato was only 62, and I remember Tony vaguely from the early days of Saturday Night Live. Not the very early days, but like early 80s. Mm-hmm. A whole bunch of people shuffled through the cast very quickly in the late 70s and early 80s as they were scrambling to reformat the show after Lorne Michaels left and the whole original cast left. And Tony was one of those guys that came in at that time. That's when Eddie Murphy came in and Gilbert Gottfried came in. I saw so many crazy people around back then. But Tony is not super well remembered from SNL, but he was there. He also voiced Luigi in some of the Super Mario Brothers cartoons and projects and stuff, later, of course. And he's also one of the very few people to have been part of the cast of Saturday Night Live and SCTV.
Wow, cool.
That's a short list.
Yeah,
that's Martin Short and maybe one or two more, not many. That's Tony Rosato. Dick Gauthier, how would you say his name?
Yeah, I would say Gauthier.
Perhaps Gauthier. Was 85, and this is a guy with a million credits on everything. He played Robin Hood on When Things Were Rotten, which was, I know Cornflake's a fan of the Mel Brooks Robin Hood Men in Tights, but the When Things Were Rotten was Mel Brooks' TV series in the 70s.
I had no idea that was on.
Yeah, it was called When Things Were Rotten. He was Robin Hood on it. He played a magician on the Wonder Woman TV series with Linda Carter. He was on all the game shows back then. He played the Adam West version of Batman in a PSA they did in the early 70s, because Adam West was not available or didn't want to do it.
Did they at least dub Adam West's voice?
I don't think so. I think Dick did the voice as well, but he got in the suit to be like Adam West Batman with Burt Ward and Yvonne Craig. It was that PSA they did about equal pay for women.
Cool.
In the early 70s. Yeah, so he actually played Adam West playing Batman, essentially, which is pretty weird.
Nifty.
I did a voice on the Transformers. Did a voice on G.I. Joe, Tom and Jerry Kids. Man, this goes on and on. Right? He did voices in everything.
Okay.
Sir John Hurt.
Yeah.
From Harry Potter, right?
Well, I would say originally from Elephant Man.
Elephant Man? Alien on my list.
And he reprised his role from Alien in Spaceballs.
Oh, that's cool.
Yes.
And later in life, he appeared on Doctor Who in the 50th anniversary special and did some follow-up audios. So I actually got to see him at Gallifrey.
So John Hurt, okay. Yeah. Cornflick, where's the coffee?
Mm.
Are you out yet?
Mm-mm.
You might need a
Getting
second
close.
Cup.
Yeah.
I didn't realize you'd seen John Hurt in person.
I had, yeah.
That's cool.
He's just a very prolific actor over the course of his life. He was in I, Claudius as well. That's something he's pretty well known for.
Yeah, he's one of those real actors. Well, he's a sir.
He was a sir.
They indicted him, apparently. How about that?
They did.
John Hurt was 77. Mike Connors was 91, and I don't think he's really on our radar too much, but a big enough name that I wanted to mention him because he was Mannix, one of those 70s detective shows.
Uh-huh. I've heard of the show, but I don't know anything about it.
You know, they made so many of those shows by Banachek and Columbo, and there was Mannix.
All right.
That was Mannix. Barbara Hale was 94. Best known as Della Street, who was the secretary to Perry Mason on the old Perry Mason TV series with Raymond Burr. She's also the mother of William Catt, the greatest American hero.
Yeah.
And she actually appeared on an episode of Greatest American Hero playing his mother.
Well, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
When I was little, the Perry Mason music used to scare the heck out of me.
That is scary music.
I think I would just it would come on and I would run from the room. It's very, very dramatic and sinister sounding.
Yeah.
And by coincidence, Elizabeth Bauer also died this year at 69. And I included her on the list because I noticed among her credits was she was a regular on Ironside, which was the show that Raymond Burr made after Perry Mason.
I'm not sure I even heard of that.
Ironside, yeah. This was Raymond Burr. He was a former policeman or detective, but then he had an accident. He was in a wheelchair.
Okay, that sounds...
So he was Ironside.
Vaguely familiar.
Yeah. So Barbara Hale and Elizabeth Bauer, both co-stars of Raymond Burr on his various wacky shows back in the 60s and 70s. Bob Holliday. This is a weird one. Bob Holliday was 84. This was the guy that played Superman on Broadway in the late 60s. They did a Superman musical called It's a Bird, It's a Plane, It's Superman.
That was a thing?
Yes. They made a Broadway Superman musical.
Yeah, taking a drink just because that was a thing.
They adapted it for television, too, and we have a copy of that.
We've seen the bootleg version of, there was a mid-70s TV adaptation of this musical, not with Bob Holliday. A different guy played Superman on TV, but this was the Broadway Superman.
I'm going to be chuckling, imagining Superman on Broadway all night.
The TV version, at least. I can't speak for Bob's performance on Broadway, but the TV version is astonishingly awful. There are some good performances in it, and there are familiar people. Loretta Swit
was pretty good in it.
She was really good in it. Al Molinaro from Happy Days is in it, and a few other people
that
you'd recognize. Yeah, it's a very, very weird show. Warren Frost was 91. Another guy from Twin Peaks.
Another guy from Twin Peaks.
And related to... What's his name from Twin Peaks? Right?
Mark Frost, who was the co-creator. Mark Frost is his son. And he had a regular role on Twin Peaks. And they brought him in just for a brief cameo on the revived series because I believe he was already pretty ill.
They rounded up everybody from the original Twin Peaks. They made a new version and then everybody died.
Well, at least three people died.
At least three people. See what's going on. See, that's a conspiracy. Yes. That's enough for a wacky conspiracy theory. Warren Frost was also the father of George's fiance on Seinfeld.
And that's an episode you like to talk about a lot because it involves chickens.
Yes, I'm a huge fan of the crazy conversation that he has with George's father about chickens. That's Warren Frost. What do I have next here? Chris Wiggins was 86, and this is a Canadian voice actor who did voices on Babar, the elephant.
Yeah.
And those old 60s Marvel cartoons. He was the voice of Thor. He did voice work on Spider-Man, on Alf Tales. And then we get into some Nelvana stuff now. Our favorite Canadian animation studio, Nelvana. He did voices on Star Wars Droids and Star Wars Ewoks in the 80s. He was Toad in Rockin' Rule. Legendary animated movie from Nelvana, Rock and Roll. He was in that. He was Santa Claus in Easter Fever.
Yeah, that's one of the
one of our Nelvana favorites. He was in Mazes and Monsters, not a Nelvana project, but we should note he was
in live action.
The weird Tom Hanks D&D themed movie, Mazes and Monsters. And let's see, he was the devil in The Devil and Daniel Mouse.
And that was kind of the model for Rock and Roll, which had a very similar storyline.
Yes. So he was the devil in that one. And a character that came up on the Flopcast very recently when you were here to do your mayor list.
Was he the mayor?
The mayor in A Cosmic Christmas.
Oh.
Was Chris Wiggins. So how about that? There's a pile of fine voices.
Absolutely.
This was the guy.
Pretty much all the Nelvana productions.
Nelvana gave him a lot of work, but he was the guy screaming for everybody to keep calm in Cosmic Christmas. Chris Wiggins. Bill Woodson was another voice actor. He was 99.
Another 99-year-old voice actor.
This guy did the opening narration for The Odd Couple. You know that classic, the opening to The Odd Couple?
Cool.
Also did narration on Grizzly Adams. On WKRP in Cincinnati, Les Nessman, the newsman, had like a pre-recorded intro piece that they would play introducing the great newsman, Les Nessman. That was the voice of Bill Woodson.
He really found a groove there.
He had one of those big announcer voices.
Yeah.
Well, Super Friends. Ted Knight was the announcer voice originally on Super Friends. Then he left, and Bill Woodson came in. This was the guy that would say, "Meanwhile at the Hall of Justice."
Nice.
That was this guy. And he was J. Jonah Jameson on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Another favorite of ours.
That's a great show. Neil Fingleton was only 36, but we have him on this list because he was one of the giants on Game of Thrones. They hired a real giant to play a giant on Game of Thrones. Neil was over 7 feet 7 inches tall.
Wow.
He was the tallest man in England. So, yeah, isn't that cool? Because they CGI everything on these shows, but they actually went out and got a real giant so they could CGI a little less, I guess.
Yeah.
I love those giants on Game of Thrones, though.
Yeah, the giants were really cool.
Yeah, there's a couple of them, I think, but he was Mag the Mighty. Oh, here's one that caught me by surprise because I could have sworn this guy died like 15 years ago, but Judge Wapner died this year.
I thought the same. I had no idea he was still kicking around
Judge
until
Wapner
2017.
Was 97. I used to watch a lot of People's Court back in the day.
Me too. I don't think anything was on at the time other than People's Court.
No, clearly there was nothing else on because That is what we watched. Because People's Court, the original Wapner version of People's Court, a lot of it was just really normal, boring cases.
Yeah.
Which actually is better, I think, because now all daytime TV trial stuff,
it's trashy.
Everything has to be outrageous.
Right, yeah.
You know,
Super sensationalized.
Nervous producer saying, we have to make this outrageous so nobody's going to watch. And they're probably right.
Yeah. Plus, you know, the impression that we get of court proceedings from dramas like Law and Order and stuff is completely unrealistic. So it's good that, you know, our generation grew up seeing kind of normal, everyday, boring court.
Wapner was keeping it real.
I confused him, though. I was young enough to think his name was Judge Whopper.
You can get him confused with Mayor McCheese.
Yes.
They're both great elected officials.
How come he has the same name as the Burger King thing?
John Harlan was 91. This was another radio and TV guy. Did a lot of announcing for tons of game shows back then. Password, Name That Tune, The Krypton Factor, which is a very strange game show that I remember.
And didn't have anything to do with Superman?
Nothing to do with Superman. Yeah, it was a weird show Dick Clark did called The Krypton Factor. We'll also talk about it sometime. We don't have time right now, but he was the announcer on The Krypton Factor. But also, the reason I made sure I wanted to mention him, in UHF, Weird Al's movie UHF, the announcer voices you would hear on U62.
Oh, talking about what shows we're going to be next.
Yeah, Weird Al's UHF station in the movie. He was the voice of U62. Chuck Barris, speaking of game shows, Chuck Barris was 87.
He's someone who I also would have thought had already passed away.
Yeah.
But The Gong Show, of course, a new game.
Man, I watched my fair share of The Gong Show back then.
Yeah, I'm afraid I did too.
You just couldn't look away. It was just so goofy and crazy.
And they made a movie about him over a decade ago.
Yeah. What was that called? I always forget.
It's called, I think, Confessions of a Dangerous Mind,
yeah.
And that starred Sam Rockwell.
Yes, thank you. And he was a songwriter also, wrote a hit song back in the 60s, I think, called Palisades Park.
Yeah, they covered that in the movie too.
Yes, that was him. And then in the movie, he also claimed to be like a secret government operative or something, but
right.
Everyone's pretty sure he was just making it all up.
Oh, wow.
He was a nut. But very successful in show business.
Very successful nut.
Darlene Cates was 69 years old, and this was, if you remember, in the movie What's Eating Gilbert Grape,
mm-hmm.
Johnny Depp's mother, very, very big lady,
yeah.
who was just bedridden, and she'd done very little acting, if any, before that,
right.
And she was so great in that,
you know,
just a fantastic performance, and she had a tough time, obviously, with her physical struggles through her life, but man, she delivered a great performance in that movie. That was Darlene Cates. Don Rickles was 90. Not many left from that era of old-time comedians.
I know.
And Don Rickles, even very, very, very late in life, and he'd go on Letterman still once or twice a year
mm-hmm.
and still just be hysterical. He still had his timing. He was still sharp.
And that expression.
And then he was with the potato in Toy Story.
Yeah.
Don Rickles. Charlie Murphy was only 57. He was probably best known from Chappelle's Show.
Chappelle's Show, yeah.
Which I didn't see too much of, but that's Eddie Murphy's older brother.
Oh, love.
Charlie Murphy.
I've heard it's come back. I haven't watched any of the newer episodes, but back when Chappelle's Show was originally on, I was watching that. Loved it. Charlie Murphy, yeah? Yes.
Cool. This one made us all very, very sad. Erin Moran.
Joni
Cunningham.
Happy Days. How come it couldn't be Chachi?
I'm telling you. From Happy Days.
Joni instead.
And from Joni Loves Chachi. And now nobody loves Chachi because Chachi's a horrifying monster. But Erin was only 56 and really certainly by far what she's best known for. You know, I don't think she did too much beyond Happy Days and Joni Loves Chachi. But she was so good in that part. And especially the Happy Days got so goofy as it rolled along because it ran for 10 or 11 years.
And she was so much fun to watch.
The early episodes as well, she was like a perfect 1950s kid sister.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could not do better than that. Cast the perfect girl for that part. And that was Erin Moran. Jonathan Demme.
Yeah.
73.
That came as a surprise. I didn't realize he was so old.
Great film director, of course, and it's so hard to pin him down. He did so much, and so many of his movies are so just radically different.
Mm-hmm. Silence of the Lambs, of course, is what he's probably best known for.
He did the Talking Heads concert movie, Stop Making Sense, and Something Wild, that weird Melanie Griffith thing.
I've never seen that.
Married to the Mob? You mentioned that recently, right?
Yeah, Matthew Modine and Michelle Pfeiffer.
Sure, so he was doing comedies and horror and concert films. And Philadelphia was his, wasn't it?
I think you're right, yeah.
I think so. Jonathan Demme. Kurt Lowens was 91, a German-born actor, and not super well-known. He did an A-Team appearance in a lot of various movies and TV shows and stuff. One of his movies, he starred in a movie, and I just love the name of this. This might be the best name of a movie ever. He made a movie called Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory. And yes, he was the werewolf.
Oh, man.
Of course.
But the reason I put him on the list... That's enough, I guess, to get on our list.
Right. You made the cut.
You've made the list as soon as you star in Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory. But also, I mentioned he was German. He was a Holocaust survivor, and he rescued about 150 Jewish children during the Holocaust.
Amazing.
So this guy's a World War II hero, and also he's a werewolf in a girl's dormitory.
Yeah, those are good credentials right there.
He's done it all.
Man, amazing. Michael Parks was 77. This is another Twin Peaks actor, Jean Reno.
Yeah, he was a bad guy.
Mm-hmm. He popped up in a lot of Quentin Tarantino movies, and Robert Rodriguez used him in some stuff. And then Kevin Smith used him a couple of times. He starred in a couple of those recent weird Kevin Smith movies that don't really look like Kevin Smith movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen one of his films in a while.
Yeah, because
I probably missed him.
Red State.
Mm-hmm.
Michael Parks was the star of Red State, playing like the leader of a religious nut cult family. That was him. And then also Tusk, his bizarre walrus horror movie, also starred Michael Parks. So he did some strange projects with Kevin Smith in recent years. Powers Booth was 68.
Yeah, I can't think of him without thinking of Gorilla Grodd, because he did the voice of Gorilla Grodd very memorably on Justice League and Justice League Unlimited.
Yes, he was so great on the Justice League cartoons.
But we watched Red Dawn not too long ago.
Yep.
He was great in that.
Yeah, he pops up as a soldier in Red Dawn, a Cold War classic. A million movies, of course. He did a season of 24, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's been on 24 at this point.
The Avengers and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and... just one of those great tough guy character actor types.
Yeah, he had a great voice, too.
Powers Booth. Another very sad one here, but Lisa Spoonhour, speaking of Kevin Smith movies,
right.
The first Kevin Smith movie, Clerks. One of the stars was Lisa Spoonhour. She was the ex-girlfriend of Dante,
Caitlin
Bree. And Lisa was only 44. Didn't do a lot of acting beyond Clerks. That was really, I think, just about all she did as far as acting. She married Jeff Anderson after Clerks, who played Randall. Yeah, they were married briefly.
Mm.
Yeah, and then she remarried sometime after that. But that one really hits you, Lisa. Let's see. Sir Roger Moore.
Right.
Was 89. I don't know a lot about Roger Moore because I was never a James Bond guy.
Me either, but I've, of the few James Bond films I've seen a couple of his, and he was on The Saint on British television as well. And I remember him being on The Muppet Show, and most of the guests on The Muppet Show will sing. He did not sing. He kind of talked his way through Talk to the Animals from Dr. Doolittle.
I will not sing, and I will not appear on screen with any puppets. These are my demands. Sincerely, Sir Roger Moore. Peter Salas was 96.
Wallace from Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, this is the voice of Wallace.
I remember hearing about this one, and I remember hearing an interview and him admitting, despite Wallace's love for cheese, that this voice actor didn't really like cheese at all.
I don't know how you can't like cheese.
It just wasn't his thing.
I feel like I've been living a lie now. I don't know if I can process that information.
And he also hated dogs.
Ask them to what a great actor he was, right?
Yeah.
You could really fake it. Glenn Headley was only 62.
Right. I remember her most vividly from Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Right. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Mr. Holland's Opus she was in.
Yeah.
I don't think I saw that
as well.
She was Tess Trueheart in the Dick Tracy movie,
yep.
The Warren Beatty Dick Tracy movie.
Saw that too.
1990. Yeah, how about that? Bill Dana was 92, and this is one of those big comedians from back in the day that isn't probably too well remembered these days, but he had a character called Jose Jimenez. That was like his big wacky character back in the day. He'd go on the Ed Sullivan Show all the time, one of those kinds of guys.
Uh-huh.
And then he had his own show, The Bill Dana Show, which also featured Jonathan Harris, who would go on to Lost in Space.
Oh, cool.
And Don Adams, who would go on to Get Smart. So Bill Dana was a very influential guy back in the day. Another director is on the list, and that's John Avildsen, was 81. This was the director of Rocky.
Oh.
The original Rocky, which, man, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
You know, the Rocky series just devolves into 80s cartoonish action.
But you wouldn't have had all of those other movies following that if the original hadn't been something special.
The original
special.
Was so great, and it holds up. It's so special.
It does.
Saw it just a few years ago, and such a testament to the direction of it, because... like Philadelphia, it's set in Philadelphia, obviously, but look, Philadelphia is a character in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of those movies where the setting is so integral to the feel of the whole thing. So he really did such a beautiful job with that.
Now, does the running up the stairs thing happen in the original?
Yes.
Still inspires people to this day.
People are still running up those stupid stairs in Philadelphia.
Oh, we were speaking of the TV Land statues earlier. I'm pretty sure that there's a Rocky statue
running
at that
up
set
the stairs.
Yes. At the top.
At the top, yeah. Arms raised up at the top, yeah. Every day that you know there's a line of tourists running up to that statue. John Avildsen also directed The Karate Kid.
Oh,
I didn't know that.
Come on, yeah.
Another very
inspirational,
very inspirational underdog mm-hmm. Type of movie.
And a great movie. And again, The Karate Kid
sequels
yeah. kind of slips in quality a little bit as it goes along.
A lot. I like Karate Kid 2.
By a little, we mean a lot.
Karate Kid Part 3 is dire. I'm sorry.
But the first one is great. First Rocky, first Karate Kid, absolute classics, both from John Avildsen. Stephen First was 63. This is Flounder from Animal House.
And I know him best, and I'm sure many listeners do, from Babylon 5.
Yes.
Where he played Veer. He was one of the Centauri, the guys with the big forehead and big hair.
Yes. I've seen him in that role,
mm-hmm.
although I did not watch Babylon 5. Yes, so a couple of different kind of real iconic parts from Stephen First. Sam Shepard was 73, was a playwright as well as an actor. One of his better known roles would be from The Right Stuff. He was Chuck Yeager in The Right Stuff, among many, many other things over the years. Patty Deutsch was 73. She was a comic performer back in the day, and she was on Laugh-In. I knew her best from Match Game. She was one of those regular panelists on the Match Game.
Yeah.
She wasn't always there. She'd rotate in and out. You know, mm-hmm. there were a handful of them that they'd kind of Joyce Bulifant.
Yes. Right. They couldn't all be there. Charles Nelson Reilly.
Yeah. You had Richard Dawson and Charles Nelson Reilly
Brent
and
Summers.
Brett Summers, and then the other three seats would rotate. She mm-hmm. was among those rotating in and out. Leonard Landy was 84, and he was one of the last surviving kids from the old R Gang series. He was actually one of the little rascals.
Wow.
Not one of the big name, you know, knowns, but there's so many kids were in that group at different points. He was in the cast during the 1939 to 1942 era.
Wow.
And I think there's still a handful still alive, I think. Again, none of the big name ones that you'd really know are still alive, but some of those kids are still around. John Hurd was 71. He was in Big.
Yep.
He was what, Elizabeth Perkins' creepy boyfriend
in
Big? He was the father in Home Alone.
Okay. 1 and 2.
Yeah, which I didn't see those Home Alone movies, but I know that was one of his other big parts he's best known for. Macaulay Culkin's dad in Home Alone. The Sharknado movies, I think he's been involved in. One of them, at least. So he did a lot of stuff. Deborah Watling was 69. This is one of the Doctor Who companions,
And I've seen her.
You saw her in person?
Taking a drink.
To the coffee, everyone.
Oh. I've seen her at a couple different Doctor Who conventions over the years. Even pre-Gallifrey, I saw her at Visions, which was a Chicago area convention that I went to in the 90s.
According to my notes, she's the companion of the second Doctor.
That's right. She played Victoria, and she was a...
Victoria Waterfield?
Yes.
Okay. I have so many notes here.
She was on the show in the 60s, and she was fun at conventions, and she was, you know, beloved actress from Doctor Who fans will certainly miss.
Here's one that's important to me, because he's in a movie I watch every year. And important to our friend Matt, if he's out there listening. I know this is a favorite of Matt's as well. From Meatballs, Harvey Atkin was 74. And this was the guy that ran the camp. This was Morty Melnick.
Who they put his bed somewhere different every night and just give him a really hard time.
He really took a beating for the home. For one thing, they called him Mickey. His name was Morty.
Yeah.
Everyone would scream, "Hi, Mickey." And then they just tortured him.
Why did he keep hiring the same counselors every year? They would always put him through this. He was just hapless.
Yeah. They all kind of came together at the end of the sing-along at the campfire, yeah. Right? He seemed to be cool with everybody yeah. at that point.
But they have to play one last prank on him
after before that.
They leave.
Yeah. That was Harvey Atkin. George Romero
mm-hmm.
was 77, another major director we lost this year. And, of course, really the father of the modern vision of zombies.
That Night of the Living Dead, which I only saw for the first time a few years ago, really holds up.
Yeah, it works. And, again, there's no effects,
mm-hmm.
no budget. You know, they didn't have zombie makeup and fancy monster effects happening. It was just people creeping around. And
it's scary as all get
up. It's so scary. It very effective. And
very
and
intense.
The whole zombie genre, right up through The Walking Dead and all the other modern projects today, it all started with George Romero.
I don't think I could watch that after the first 13 minutes. I tried.
Yeah, we watched the Riff Tracks version
right.
a couple of years ago.
They
did one of the Riff Tracks live. Yeah. They did Night of the Living Dead, which is weird because it's a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's maybe the only one that they've done live.
He did Creepshow in the early 80s as well.
Yeah, I'm not a horror person, so yeah. Night of the Living Dead is about as much as I can handle.
Let's see. Wally Burr was 91, primarily an animation director, voice director, and he worked on every show for Hanna-Barbera, certainly mm-hmm. in the 70s. He was working on Dinomutt, Hong Kong Phooey, Captain Caveman. Later on, he did Inspector Gadget. And he did some voice work as well. And for our purposes, we have to point out he was the voice of the Atom on the Super Friends.
Cool.
And we love the Atom. That's the guy that shrinks down really tiny. Nelson Ellis was only 39 and not a guy that I was familiar with, but he was a regular on True Blood. Played a character named Lafayette on True Blood, and I think Dragon Con, when we mentioned him, there were certainly people there that remembered him, mm-hmm. so I wanted to throw him in here because I'm sure he had his fans and people familiar with his work. Nelson Ellis. Joseph Bologna was 82. Again, a million movies in the 80s and beyond. Transylvania 6-5000, he pops up in, did some voice work as well, including on the Superman animated series. He was the voice of Dan Turpin. And that was the police officer that they patterned after Jack Kirby.
Oh, yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, that was Joe Bologna. I knew him best probably from Blame It on Rio. Best movie ever made. Haru Nakajima was 88, and I'm probably butchering his name, but this was the guy in the Godzilla suit.
Oh, wow.
In all the classic Godzilla movies.
Wow.
Like, he was considered the best guy. This was the guy...
He moved the rubber suit around the yeah. most convincingly.
Like you really needed a guy that knew how to do
yeah.
that.
Yeah, not everybody knows how to yeah. throw a building right.
From the mid-50s through the early 70s, he was in all the Godzilla
That's
movies.
That's amazing.
And some of the other monsters as well. Sure. Rodan and some, he played the other monsters when they made those movies.
Was he Mothra? Also,
yes. Not in full-blown moth form, but he was in the larval stage of Mothra.
All right.
He was in the suit.
Cool.
Very important guy. Robert Hardy was 91, and he's in the Harry Potter movies, or one of them at least, as Cornelius Fudge. Do you know who that is?
Yes.
Okay. I don't know Harry Potter. But I put him in here because I thought maybe you did. That was Robert Hardy. Jay Thomas was only 69.
That was a tough one.
Yeah, because Jay Thomas, I probably saw him first on Mork and Mindy.
Yeah, me too.
He had a weird part on Mork and Mindy. Like they wanted like another young guy on mm-hmm. Mork and Mindy. So they had him and his sister, and they ran a deli.
Yeah.
Just as supporting characters on Mork and
Mindy. Yeah, that was like a regular, one of the regular settings of the show.
And
if they weren't up in the apartment, they were at the deli.
They go to the deli. I've heard him in interviews just talking about how ridiculous that whole experience was. But yeah, he was a young guy, and he was a radio guy, and then suddenly he was on a TV show mm-hmm. making good money for a pretty ridiculous part as a deli guy.
And we could say no to that.
Eddie LeBeck on Cheers.
Sure.
That's when Carla got married to a hockey player on Cheers. That was Jay Thomas as Eddie LeBeck.
Wasn't he on Murphy Brown too?
Yes, he had a regular part of Murphy Brown also right around that same era. I remember a very short-lived show called Married People that he was on also. Another
that
sitcom.
Sound familiar.
It was a sitcom with like three couples living in the same house. He was like the middle-aged couple and there was a young couple and an elderly couple. Married People. I think I watched it once.
Yeah. Of course, you know, he remained present in our minds for many years after that because he would go on David Letterman every year around the same time around the holidays. And he would tell the same story every year because it was one of Dave's favorite showbiz
stories.
It was
such a bizarre tradition. Well, for one thing, they had a giant Christmas tree that's set up on the Letterman set every year, and they put a meatball at the top of the tree. a big actual meatball. And then, so one year they had, I can't remember who it was now, but some like big NFL quarterback guy was a guest on the show. So this guy and Dave were like, let's throw footballs at the tree and knock the meatball off the top of the tree. And they couldn't hit it. They were throwing football after football, could not hit the meatball. Jay Thomas was backstage. He just came running out, picked up one football, and boom, just perfect shot, knocked down the meatball. So they brought him back every year after that. He'd come out, he'd throw a football at the Christmas tree and knock down the meatball.
Would he knock it down every time?
Yeah, well, not on the first shot. Right. It would take multiple shots sometimes. And then he would tell what Dave considered the greatest show business anecdote of all times. So he made Jay Thomas tell the same story every year about this bizarre experience that Jay Thomas had once with the Lone Ranger. And it's a crazy, bizarre story. And yeah, Dave loved it. He'd tell it every year. There was one year that Jay Thomas could not go on the show for some reason. I don't know if he had a scheduling issue or
I think he was sick.
A health issue. Yeah. Yeah, he was sick. So they brought out John McEnroe, the tennis player.
I could not figure out why they did that.
They just said, who's available? They brought in right. McEnroe. McEnroe sat down and told the exact same story about the Lone Ranger as if it had happened to him. And then they hit tennis balls at the meatball.
And one time, they filmed a little reenactment of the event with Dave playing the Lone Ranger.
Yes. And then just a couple of years ago, Jay Thomas was on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, which, by the way, is a great podcast. And they do a memorial show like we're doing right now. Mm-hmm. They just did theirs a couple of weeks ago, and it was excellent. And they go into like real old-timey show business people. When Jay Thomas was on Gilbert's show, they brought up his story, his Letterman story about the Lone Ranger. And Jay said, I got to tell you what happened after that. And Jay had a whole other crazy story about the Lone Ranger. But this is Clayton Moore, the guy that played the Lone Ranger, that was so outrageous that he couldn't even tell it on Letterman.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it was not family friendly, let's say.
But he told it to Gilbert. So if that episode is still available at Gilbert's show, I recommend looking up Jay Thomas. You got to hear the rest of the story of the Lone Ranger.
I had no idea there was a rest of the story. Wow.
Jerry Lewis.
Great Balls of Fire.
No.
That's Jerry Lee Lewis.
My bad.
We're talking Jerry Lee Lewis, strangely, is still alive.
Oh.
Jerry Lewis. You know, comedian Jerry Lewis. You
know, muscular telethon.
Telethon Jerry Lewis.
Nutty
Professor. Jerry Lewis died. He was 91. I was never a big Jerry Lewis guy.
Nope.
He's one of those old-time comedians that of our generation, it's like, what's the big deal about this guy? He doesn't seem to, like Bob Hope. You know, a lot of guys that were around when we were kids, like, why do people like this guy?
I think I related to Bob Hope a little more than Jerry Lewis. Jerry Lewis was a very screwball comedian. Oh, yeah.
I'd watch that stupid telethon every year, though, when I was a kid.
Yep. I don't think that I ever did.
Oh, yeah. I put in many sad hours.
Went to the telethon.
Yeah, school was closed that day. Yeah, so Jerry Lewis. I know people love him. And I know Martin and Lewis, like Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin, people these days can't even process how huge they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing movies and stuff, but just as a nightclub act, it was like the Beatles. People would go out of their minds over Jerry Lewis and Dean Martin back in the day.
My grandmother would have loved that.
Yeah, so on a level that we can't comprehend, he was a massive, massive star. That's Jerry. All right, Dick Gregory was 84. Speaking of old comedians that people our age have largely forgotten about. But Dick Gregory was very important civil rights activist, as well as being a comedian. And he's, you know, African-American guy and one of the first of his generation to break through to not just play the black clubs mm-hmm. back in the 60s and get on TV and get into the mainstream clubs. And so an important, thoughtful guy back then, Dick Gregory. Tobe Hooper was 74. This is another director. He directed Poltergeist.
Oh.
Salem's Lot. Texas Chainsaw Massacre. He did a bizarre movie called Life Force, which I just heard Gilbert Gottfried screaming about recently. That's Tobe Hooper. Another old-timey comedian that we've all forgotten about these days is Shelley Berman, who was 92. And I guess in more recent years, I never watched Curb Your Enthusiasm, but he played Larry David's father on Curb Your Enthusiasm. So I guess people have seen him in more recent times. But one of the major comics from back in the 60s, maybe late 50s and 60s, the kind of comedy that Bob Newhart became a massive star doing, this guy was doing it first, like the telephone conversation stuff. Like Shelley Berman was a big influence on what Newhart ended up doing, and Shelley Berman probably deserves more credit than he ever got for that style of a comedy. That's Shelley Berman. John Hostetter was 69, another guy that was on Murphy Brown and also did a lot of voice stuff, and particularly on G.I. Joe. I never watched the G.I. Joe cartoons, but he was the voice of Bazooka on G.I. Joe. Frank Vincent was 80 years old, did a lot of Martin Scorsese movies, Raging Bull, Casino. He was on The Sopranos. He would always play a gangster or a mobster from North Adams. He's from North Adams, Massachusetts, by coincidence. That's way out western Massachusetts, right? We've been out there. But for our purposes, in Goodfellas, this is Billy Batts. This is the guy they beat to death at the bar, the guy that yelled at Joe Pesci, "Go get your shine box." Billy Batts.
I think I used to mix him up with Dennis Farina.
Yeah, I think at one point you thought that was Dennis Farina, because he was playing a mobster with the gray hair and the mustache. That was Frank Vincent. And speaking of Goodfellas, also Chuck Lowe was 89. This is another guy that got murdered in Goodfellas.
Everyone gets murdered. Gets murdered in Goodfellas.
That's a long list, but this is Maury, as in Maury's wig shop. This is that goofy, annoying wig shop owner that kept pestering Robert De Niro, "Where's my money?" from the Lufthansa heist. And that did not end well for Maury. Harry Dean Stanton was 91.
Someone else who appeared on Twin Peaks.
This is another Twin Peaks guy. He was in the movie.
He was, he was
in the new one.
Fire Walk With Me, and then, the revival of the TV series. Mm-hmm. Just a great character actor. I've seen, a lot of independent films that he's been in over the years.
The Green Mile is a favorite of yours, Cornflake, right? He's in that.
Paris, Texas is a great one that he's in.
Yeah, Escape from New York, Repo Man. All right, that's Harry Dean Stanton. Where are we? Bernie Casey was a football player originally. Played for the San Francisco 49ers, then got into movies. And I think I only know him from Revenge of the Nerds. He was the head of the Lambda, Lambda, Lambda fraternity. So he's the guy that the nerds go to see if they could open a branch of Lambda, Lambda, Lambda. Anne Jeffries was 94. She appeared on a Buck Rogers episode. Oh, she was in a Battlestar Galactica episode, the old 70s Galactica, playing the love interest of a character played by Fred Astaire. Fred Astaire was a guest star on that same episode.
Of Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
And it says in that episode, Anne Jeffries was the last person to dance on screen with Fred Astaire.
Whoa.
So that's a cool claim to fame. And also, by coincidence, we mentioned that the actress from the 1990 Dick Tracy movie, who played Tess Trueheart.
Oh, Glenn Headley.
Glenn Headley, yes, died this year. Well, Anne Jeffries played Tess Trueheart also way back in the 40s.
Huh.
So two Tess Trueheart actresses from 50 years apart. Monty Hall.
Let's make a deal.
Another game show guy. This is somebody I had no idea Monty Hall was still alive.
Yeah, I gotta say.
I had no idea people named their kids Monty.
Monty Hall was 96. I was never a Let's Make a Deal fan.
I was not either.
No, that wasn't one of the game shows that I watched.
I didn't find it entertaining.
I got made fun of, when I was trying to bargain my way out of being grounded. I got called Monty Hall.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, it's hysterical. I love
it. Sarcastic in your family. Nice try, Monty Hall. That's good.
And I couldn't believe that was a real name until I actually met somebody else named Monty. Kid I rode the bus with.
Perfect.
So I know two people named Monty. I guess I get to take two drinks of coffee.
Do it. But this is Let's Make a Deal. So everybody in the audience would put on wacky costumes to try to get Monty's attention.
Because
he just picked people out of the audience to do his...
I do that every day.
...stupid deals with. And then the inspiration for what they call the Monty Hall problem. You know the math problem, the Monty Hall problem?
No, we do not.
This is the thing. See if you can follow this.
Oh, no.
And Let's Make a Deal. They'd be there's three doors, right? Door one, door two, door three.
Uh-huh.
Behind one of these doors, there's a new car. You'll win a new car or whatever, some big prize like that. Behind the other two doors...
is nothing.
Or a goat. And sometimes they'd say a goat. They literally have a live goat on stage. So one of these doors has a new car. The other two doors have a goat. Pick a door. So then the person would pick a door. So they'd say, all right, I'll pick door number one. Then Monty would say, you pick number one. Let's show you what's behind door number two. And then they'd open door number two. There's a goat. Then Monty would say, now, do you want to stick with door number one? Or do you want to switch to door number three? The question is the player better off sticking with door number one? Are they better off switching to door number three? Or does it make no difference at all? That's the Monty Hall problem.
I think it makes no difference at all because they're stalling while they move the things behind the door.
Assuming that Monty Hall's not a cheater, the answer is you should switch. You're actually doubling your chances if you switch to door number 3 at that point. It's hard to process at first until you really get at the way the game works. But yeah, that's the Monty Hall problem. I read a whole book about it.
What?
A book called The Monty Hall Problem came out a few years ago.
Do you have it around here somewhere?
I don't own it, but I got it from the library. But it goes into the math.
Mm-hmm.
And it
takes the whole book to go through the math?
Yeah, well, then it gets more complicated. Sure. It's like, what if we added a fourth door? It gets into the crazy math.
So it's like about probability, basically.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Instead of devoting great brain power to something like bioinformatics, people are thinking through the Monty Hall.
We're just trying to figure out how problem. To get a goat. Yes. Ralphie May was only 45. This was a stand-up comedian, and he's a pretty big-name stand-up comedian the last few years. He was a big guy,
mm-hmm.
so I think he had some health issues. Very funny guy. I saw him just this past year. He popped up on Penn & Teller's show, Penn & Teller Fool mm-hmm. Us. He just came out like as a surprise celebrity guest. I'd hear him on podcasts and stuff once in a while. A funny guy, Ralphie May. Roy Dotrice, if I'm saying that right. Was a British actor. He was a regular on the old Beauty and the Beast TV series, the one with the big lion dude on it back in the late 80s.
George R. R. Martin created that show.
Yes, well, he was on Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Also, this guy, Wisdom Hayline, the Pyromancer. Do you know who that is?
Vaguely.
You know these Game of Thrones people. He was also the father of Mozart in the Amadeus movie.
Okay.
Did some cool stuff. Let's go. Ned Romero was 90. He's a Native American actor, so he'd get all the Native American parts, of course, over the years. He did a Land of the Lost episode. There was a Land of the Lost where there was like a Native American and some old Civil War soldier or something, and they were fighting with each other. He was on A Different Strokes, where Mr. Drummond's company was going to make a new building on top of an Indian burial ground.
Oh, of course they were.
I remember that episode all too well. And he was on Northern Exposure, of course, $6 Million Man, and three different versions of Star Trek as well. He was on original Star Trek, and he was on Next Gen and Voyager.
Wow.
He played Chakotay's great-grandfather on Voyager. Some cool credits there. John Hillerman was 84. He was a regular on Magnum P.I., which I never saw. He played the mustache, I think, on Magnum P.I. He was on One Day at a Time, had a recurring part as Ann Romano's boss on One Day at a Time. He was the grandfather on the Hogan Family, and his final role was in a Very Brady sequel.
Wow.
As Dr. Whitehead. I don't remember that part. I'm going to watch a Very Brady sequel again.
Yeah.
Right now. Anne Wedgeworth was 83. She was a regular on Evening Shade, which was Burt Reynolds' sitcom in the
80s
or 90s. I never saw that. She was on one episode of Roseanne as Dan Connor's mother, John Goodman's mm-hmm. mother. But I totally remember her from Three's Company. She was Lana.
Oh, I do remember her.
Remember Lana?
Yeah.
The next door divorcee?
She was kind of the cougar.
Oh, yeah.
Before that was the name for it.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is when the Ropers got spun off into their own show. They brought in Don Knotts as Mr. Furley. And they added Lana, I think, around that same time, just to round out the cast. So, yeah, this was the older lady who was just...
Had designs on Jack.
Oh, she sure did.
Big time.
That was Lana and Wedgeworth. Earl Hyman was 91, and I threw him in here just because he was Panthro, one of the Thundercats.
Okay.
Thank you. Peter Baldwin, 86, mainly known as a director, and he directed every sitcom for several decades, directed The Wonder Years, Sanford and Son, Newhart, Benson, Get a Life, Blossom, this is such a crazy list, Small Wonder, The Robot Girl, Partridge Family. He directed the Harlem Globetrotters on Gilligan's Island.
Well, that's something that, that's his legacy, I guess.
Right.
Somebody had to do it.
Because that wasn't going to direct itself.
Now, this is important for our purposes. I do not remember this at all, but he directed a TV movie in 1984 called The Hoboken Chicken Emergency.
Now, it's a book that I've heard of, so okay. I think it's based on a children's book,
that
perhaps.
Makes sense, then. It's about someone's supposed to get a bird for Thanksgiving, but they brought home a 266-pound chicken.
Well, we have to see if that's on YouTube and watch it right now.
Yeah, and then the chicken escapes.
All right.
So we got to check that out, The Hoboken Chicken Emergency, directed by Peter Baldwin. But I haven't even gotten to the most important part yet about Peter Baldwin. Peter Baldwin directed several episodes of The Brady Bunch. He directed... the TV movie The Brady Girls Get Married. Mm-hmm. He directed several episodes of The Brady Brides, and he directed A Very Brady Christmas.
Wow.
The favorite director of Sherwood Schwartz.
Apparently.
Who also did the Gilligan's Island stuff, of course. Della Reese was 86.
Yes.
Probably best known from Touched by an Angel, which I never saw.
I watched every episode.
Every one. Wow. There were a lot of them. That was on for a long time.
9 seasons.
Wow. What?
I'm fairly certain. It started in 94.
Did it only end when Michael Landon passed away, or did it keep going after
that? No, he died way before that.
Yeah. Okay. You're thinking Highway to Heaven.
Oh,
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's so many of these shows that we never watched. They all blend together.
Touched by an Angel was Highway to Heaven for the 90s kids. Amazing singing voice. She's the one who sings Walk With You, which is the beginning of the show. And from time to time, they find reasons for her to sing. And that's really how she broke into show business.
Yeah, she had a whole singing career before
acting. Tremendous voice.
Sure. Della was also a regular on Chico and the Man, the sitcom way back in the 70s. And most importantly, she was on the A-Team as B.A., you know, Mr. T, as his mother.
That's awesome.
She was Mr. T's mom?
She was Mr. T's mom.
Great
on the A-Team.
Right there. Yes.
See wow, that? I have even more respect for Della Reese now.
David Cassidy was 67.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
Oh, man, it's a partridge. That was a sad one. Half-brother of Sean Cassidy from the Hardy Boys, of course. David Cassidy is the father of Katie Cassidy, who's a regular on Arrow and all the various DC TV shows these days. And David did some superhero work himself because David Cassidy appeared on the old Flash series back in 1990.
Oh, I forgot about that.
He was one of the villains. He played the Mirror Master on The Flash. David Cassidy. Rance Howard was 89, appeared in a million movies over the years, but probably best known for being the father of Ron Howard. And so he appeared in all Ron Howard's movies as well. But he was a working actor before Ron Howard was Ron Howard. His acting career is very impressive in its own right. Rance Howard. Heather North was 71 for 30-plus years. She was the voice of Daphne on Scooby-Doo. Mm. She was not the original voice, but in season 2, she took over the voice of Daphne.
Okay, so very long-running.
Oh, very, very, like from 1970 through the early 2000s, she was the voice of Daphne. And then I believe these days it's Grey Griffin, also known as Vamber on Mighty Magiswords. Oh. She does Daphne now.
So she gets to work with Mindy Cohn?
Sure, yeah.
I'm taking a drink for that.
Mindy Cohn, any excuse. Mindy Cohn is the voice of Velma these days, of course, on Scooby-Doo. Heather North also appeared on an episode of The Monkees, The Prince and the Paupers. That was the episode where Davy happened to look exactly like a prince.
Oh, I remember that one.
I'm guessing she fell madly in love with Davy Jones in that episode, one would assume. Alfie Curtis was 87, and this was the dude in Star Wars, the guy at the cantina, who I always called the Pig Man.
He's the one who starts the fight.
Yes. His buddy is Walrus Man.
Yeah.
The character's actual name apparently is Dr. Evazan or something like that. Guy's a doctor.
Not a very good doctor.
He seemed like just kind of a
drug jerk.
A hothead.
Yeah.
But Dr. Scholl's lovable doctor.
Yeah, that's that kind of, yeah. It's in title only, I'm sure. But yeah, I always just call him the Pig Man. But when Obi-Wan breaks out the lightsaber, though, in that scene, that was the first time in the Star Wars movie that you see a lightsaber being used in battle.
To chop
a guy's arm off. That was Alfie Curtis. Jim Nabors was 87.
Gomer Pyle
from back on the Andy Griffith Show and then spun off into his own show, Gomer Pyle, USMC.
Yeah, I was aware of the Gomer Pyle show when I was younger, but didn't realize he was originally an Andy Griffith character.
Yeah, that was a spinoff and very long-running and a super talented guy. Also a great singer. Mm-hmm. He made the news just a few years ago. It was 2013. He got married. He married his partner of 38 years. This was right after same-sex marriage became legal in the state of Washington. So he got married very late in life. And for my purposes, I knew him best from Lost Saucer, one of those live-action Croft shows from the mid-70s.
Yeah, one of the lesser-known ones, I think.
He's an android. This is where I learned that the word android was.
Didn't they have shiny suits that they liked?
Yes, it was Jim Nabors and Ruth Buzzy were androids flying around in a flying saucer. And yeah, they wore like big silver space suits with flashing lights on them.
And they had the Dorse.
The Dorse, yes, the dog-horse hybrid creature, which would also hop around the spaceship with them.
And they were looking for Robillard.
Lost Saucer. Yes, if only... Oh, can you imagine if Robillard appeared?
I'm imagining this now. Man,
we've got to make that happen. Conrad Brooks was 86 and best known from all the old Ed Wood movies. He's in Plan 9 from Outer Space. He's in Glenn or Glenda and a bunch of other ones. And because of that, he became known as like just a weird cult movie guy. And so ended up later in life, even through the 90s, he was making tons of goofy little low-budget wacky cult movies like that. Conrad Brooks. Heather Menzies was 68. And we've been watching a lot of Heather Menzies lately because we've been going through the old Logan's Run DVDs, the Logan's Run TV series. Again, we were just talking about on the 1977 sci-fi TV panel.
Yeah. We're enjoying the show. We think it holds up. And
it's really good.
She's running around in a skimpy little dress most of the time. But yeah, she gives a good performance.
Yeah.
Along with the other leads.
She is much more covered than original Jessica in the Logan's Run movie.
Okay. Yeah. That's something.
Believe me. But yeah, Heather's really good on that show, and she was, as mentioned on that panel we did that we played on the Flopcast a while back, Heather was also one of the kids in The Sound of Music. She was one of the Von Trapp children. Uh-huh. She was married to Robert Urich, from Spencer for Hire in Vegas, and Heather Menzies was mentioned by a guest of the Flopcast a couple of years ago on the show.
Is that Luke?
It was not Luke. Good guess. Close. No, it was TV's Captain America, Reb Brown.
Oh, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he actually mentioned Heather Menzies when we interviewed Reb Brown on the show because Reb Brown worked with Heather twice. Because she was in one of those TV movies, one of the Captain America TV movies was in. And she was also in, you know, that snake movie he did? Yes. She was in that one, too. So
Dirk Benedict as well.
Yes, with Dirk Benedict from the A-Team. What a cast. Plus a bunch of snakes and whatnot.
That's a dumb movie.
So we love Heather. Dick Orkin was 84. This is something I was not familiar with. That chicken TV movie caught me by surprise, the Hoboken Chicken Emergency. Here's something else we've got to look into. This was a voice actor, radio personality, radio producer. And in 1966, in the wake of the Adam West Batman series, this guy produced a radio show called Chicken Man, which was a Batman-style parody show.
What?
And it was a syndicated radio series.
Chicken Man.
Which I just learned about just now. So we got to look into Chicken Man, too.
Wow.
I've got some homework to do after this Memorial show.
Definitely.
Assuming it ever ends, and I'm starting to think it will not. Danny Breen was 67, and this is one of the cast members on Not Necessarily the News on HBO.
I remember that
back in the 80s. I used to watch a lot of Not Necessarily the News.
We didn't get HBO until well into the 80s, but I certainly remember people talking about it.
Yeah, I remember that cast well. It was, you know, Stuart Pankin and Lucy Webb, and Rich Hall was there. Mm-hmm. Rich Hall doing Sniglets before he jumped to SNL. Finally, in the movie and TV category, we have Rose Marie, who was 94, evidently. Apparently there's some confusion. She might actually be a year or two older, but we're pretty sure she was 94. Sometimes with show business people who are that old, their age is a little fuzzy because sometimes they play with their age when they're kids. Because she was a little kid in show business. There's some suspicion that her parents billed her as even a year or two younger than she really was to try to make her sound more special, I think. But she had a radio show when she was a little girl.
Wow.
She had a crazy show business career. Of course, best known as Sally on the Dick Van Dyke Show. A bunch of people from Dick Van Dyke have come up in this show. But she had a long, long show business career. In fact, maybe even the longest.
Wow.
Because I know Mark Evanier, his show business historian, Mark Evanier, who I follow his blog, and he was friends with her. He pointed that out, that she may arguably have the longest show business career ever, in that it went like, well, her IMDb credits start in 1933 and end in 2013.
Wow.
So that's an 80-year stretch, and I think that's still short a couple of years, because she was working in show business before that, before 33. But Evanier cast her in Garfield cartoons as recently as 2013. She was still working.
That's something.
And there's a new documentary about her.
Cool.
Documentary just came out. It's called Wait for Your Laugh. And it's supposed to be excellent. And the list was supposed to end with Rose Marie, but I somehow skipped over Bill Paxton. So let's circle back and say, yeah, Bill Paxton.
Yeah, he was only 66, I think.
61.
Oh, wow. Probably not best known for Twister. Maybe Titanic.
Yeah. And Aliens.
Aliens. What was he?
Weird Science.
Weird Science,
he was
yeah.
Like the annoying older brother in Weird Science.
Yeah, it gets turned into a...
That whole movie is annoying, though.
He was in True Lies, too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, one of those guys that's in everything.
But I loved him in Twister.
Well, of course. That's a weather movie for you.
Weather Channel the movie.
All right, let's jump to a new category before we just flop over. Let's go to music. And let's get this out of the way right now. We're going to start the music category with Tom Petty, who was 66.
Yeah, that was a rough one for me. Especially, I just think he was a really underrated as a songwriter. He just had some really, really great songs. And, of course, was... one of the Traveling Wilburys. There's only two of them left now.
Jeff Lynne and Dylan are the only ones left.
And Jeff Lynne was certainly influential on Tom Petty's career. His sound changed when he worked with him.
Petty, I think people kind of took for granted. I feel like I did. Just because he was always there in so many songs, and you hear the songs a billion times, just became kind of the background of your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know I did. But I saw that he was touring, and I was pretty excited for it. I thought maybe this time I'll catch him while he's coming around, because I enjoyed his music a lot. I think I clued into the existence of Tom Petty with Free Fallin'. And fun little cornflake story, that was one of the first songs I ever parodied when I was a kid. I made up a song about Colin Collect called Free Colin. Somewhere in my boxes of paperwork, there are lyrics. And who else besides Tom Petty could write a song like The Last DJ?
Yeah, I love that song.
It's an amazing song, and it breaks the fourth wall to the listener. I would like to honor Tom Petty, if I may, by doing a quick top 4.5 list of my favorite
songs. Wow, okay. Yeah, we need something to stretch the show out a little bit. So go
I'm
going to
make it really fast.
Go for it.
Do it.
Number 4, I would pick Walls.
Walls is probably my favorite.
Oh, so that would be like your half?
That would be my number half.
And You Wreck Me at number 3. Number 2, You Don't Know How It Feels. Number 1, Running Down a Dream, tied with I Won't Back Down. And number half, with its crazy Alice in Wonderland music video, Don't Come Around Here No More. And if you want to hear more about Tom Petty, can I throw in a plug for a podcast we discussed last year?
Oh, yeah.
Go listen to episode 310 of Dig Me Out, which is a podcast about music from the 90s. And it's all about Tom Petty, and there's an interview in it with Paul Zollo, who was the guy who wrote the book Conversations with Tom Petty.
We want to mention his acting work as well, because he was Lucky on King of the Hill.
Yeah, that
I
was
forgot about that.
That character, it was drawn to look exactly like Tom Petty, and he was kind of a hapless guy who wound up marrying Luann, Bobby's cousin.
Man, that was a great show. And Tom Petty did a little live-action acting as well in a little Kevin Costner movie called The Postman.
Which I never saw.
I didn't know that.
Now,
that was one of two Kevin Costner post-apocalyptic movies that were kind of big box office flops.
He was cranking them out.
That was
every year.
Husband and Waterworld.
Here's another,
did another one.
3-hour Costner movie. This one has Tom Petty.
All right.
We mentioned earlier that Jerry Lee Lewis is strangely very much alive. However, we lost two of the other absolute architects of rock and roll from the very early days. Both first year inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and that's Fats Domino
and Chuck Berry.
Fats was 89, Chuck was 90. But yeah, it's amazing that these guys that were really there at the very beginning, these were the first rock and roll stars, mm-hmm. And a couple of them we still had this year, and a couple of them we still do, because Jerry Lee Lewis is still alive, Little Richard's still alive.
Yeah,
it's amazing how, considering what a crazy lives these guys lead. A lot of them managed to hang in there for quite a while. Here's somebody I've seen in person. Half of Steely Dan, Walter Becker, was 67.
Take a drink.
I'm a Steely Dan fan, and I've been to Steely Dan concerts.
Yeah, Steely Dan's not my thing.
Yeah.
But, I can appreciate the great skill that they had.
Sure, the musicianship of it all.
Mm-hmm. I came to appreciate Steely Dan after hearing a Carrie Dalby parody about going to see a Steely Dan concert.
Again, our friend Matt is like a Steely Dan super fan.
Sure.
And I was forced to become a Steely Dan fan. When we were old enough to start driving around by ourselves, like Matt got his driver's license, so now we'd go out and drive places, and all we listened to was Steely Dan.
That's the only tape he had in the car.
Matt had a tape of Steely Dan, and Matt said, when we're in this car, this is what we're listening to. And we did. We spent a couple of years just driving around listening to that Steely Dan tape. And I heard it so much that I grew to love it.
You never snuck your air supply tape in this place.
Oh, he would have driven off, off a bridge.
there is one Steely Dan song that I really like, and that's My Old School.
My Old School is a cool one, yeah. Yeah, it's a little poppier.
Yeah, funny, you know. I think that's why I like it.
Yeah, so sometimes
it's got some great horns.
They get a little laid-back, jazzy in spaces, but it's always very cool, though. Yeah, I think when they first did their first big reunion tour, I think, was in 93. Because when I became a Steely Dan fan in the 80s, Steely Dan did not exist. Mm-hmm. They broke up in like 1980, I think. And
oh, that's surprising.
Yeah, they sat out the 80s and got back together in the early 90s. And we went to Great Woods to see their big reunion tour. Walter Becker was the guitarist. Mm-hmm. Donald Fagen's the singer. And Fagen is keeping the band going. There is a Steely Dan tour happening this year. And I read something where he was explaining, he said, like, I could not go out and do a show. Like, they can't
not call
they can't sell the show as Donald Fagen and the Steely Dan band or something. He was like, no, we have to call it Steely Dan. That's what people want. So the band goes on without one of its main guys, and that's Walter Becker. Al Jarreau was 76.
Oh, we're in this love together, right?
That was like one of his big hits, certainly. The theme from Moonlighting was a big one for Al Jarreau. And Al Jarreau has a solo in We Are the World.
Also,
he's one of the guys, he's not just in the chorus, he gets his own line.
Well, very important.
Absolutely. Tommy Alsup was 85, and the interesting thing about this guy, he was a rockabilly guy, like way back in the 50s, and he was on the tour with Buddy Holly and Ritchie Valens and the Big Bopper. He lost a coin toss with Ritchie Valens for who gets the ride in the plane.
Oh, goodness.
How about that? You know, he worked with everybody back in the day. You know, he worked with Willie Nelson, worked with Roy Orbison, and was part of the Crickets at it for a time, Buddy Holly's band. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so many crazy stories like that.
Yeah,
that was Tommy Alsup. Steve Wright. We're gonna lightning round some of these people.
Okay.
But Steve Wright was the bassist in the Greg Kinn band. As in, you know, Jeopardy.
They don't write him like that anymore.
Yes, they don't write him like that anymore. And Our Love's in Jeopardy. This guy was playing the bass. Walter Juni Morrison was 62, and he was part of the Ohio Players, one of those R&B bands from the 70s, like, you know, Love Roller Coaster, that was them.
Oh, I like Love Roller Coaster.
Yeah, those disco dudes back then, R&B. He was part of Parliament Funkadelic at a time as well. Pete Overend Watts was a founding member, another bassist, and a founding member of Mott the Hoople.
Oh, I like Mott the Hoople a lot. Good glam rock band.
Oh, sure. Yeah, they did the Bowie song, right?
Yeah, All the Young Dudes was Mott the Hoople.
Yes. Butch Trux was 69. He was a drummer with the Allman Brothers Band. His nephew is Derek Trux of the Tedeschi Trux Band these days, with Massachusetts' own Susan Tedeschi.
Yes. You know?
Jeff Nichols was a keyboardist with Black Sabbath. John Wetton was 67, and this is a guy from Asia. He was in King Crimson, and then he went on to found Asia, a prog rock supergroup.
The Final Countdown?
That's Europe.
Oh, yeah, wrong continent.
They're both great bands. Europe had better hair. I've said it before and I stand by it. The guy from Europe had better Bon Jovi hair than Bon Jovi. Steve Lang was another bassist. Wait, we lost a lot of bassists this year.
Oh, no.
Steve Lang was the bassist in April Wine. What did they do? They're one of those classic rock bands or hippie bands or something?
I couldn't tell you.
Oh, see, I was going to turn to you
rock information. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I let you down.
That's right. We'll look him up. Sonny Gerassi was 70, and he was the singer in Climax. Remember Precious and Few?
Yes.
Are the moments we two can share?
Ew.
This is the guy. Remember how that song would come out?
I can't find my way back home. It just wouldn't be there.
And then they'd go up a key, and he'd sing it again, and then they'd go up the key again. And then 20 minutes later, you're like, what's happened to my life?
Oh, gosh.
That was Sonny. Tommy Page. I don't remember this guy, but you must remember Tommy Page.
Oh, this was sad.
This was I'll Be Your Everything. It was a number one song in the early 90s.
He was loosely affiliated with the New Kids on the Block.
He worked with some of the New Kids.
I loved that ballad, I'll Be Your Everything.
Yeah.
He was only 50 or 51.
He was 46.
Wow.
I don't think I know that song, but I
oh, I do. I know every word.
Tuned way out of top 40 radio by then. I figured you'd be a fan.
I swooned over that song.
Excellent.
That was the best song for slow dances in junior high.
I'm pretty sure I know it.
Valerie Carter was 64. She was a backup vocalist, performed and recorded with Linda Ronstadt, Don Henley, Christopher Cross, Jackson Browne, James Taylor. The reason she caught my eye, though, to put on this list is that this is someone else who worked on the Devil and Daniel Mouse cartoon for Nelvana. She was the singing voice of Jan Mouse.
Okay.
So she was singing with John Sebastian. We lost two people from Devil and Daniel Mouse this year. Richie Adams was 78. He wrote Tossin' and Turnin', one of those old classic rock mm-hmm. songs from the 50s or 60s, I guess. He wrote stuff for the Archies. And he wrote the Tra-La-La song, the Banana Splits theme song.
Oh, that's pretty important.
And he wrote After the Lovin' for Engelbert Humperdinck. What a guy. Sib Hashin was 67. He was the original drummer with Boston.
Uh-huh.
And we have another Boston band here, Jay Giles. Yeah, actual Jay Giles from the Jay Giles Band. That's one of those weird cases where like it's called the Jay Giles Band, but he was the guitarist, but not the front man.
Right,
yeah.
One of those weird, like Fleetwood Mac.
Yeah. Yeah, no,
the Dave Clark Five. Mm-hmm. Isn't Dave Clark the drummer, I think?
It's very strange
when that happens.
Yeah.
But obviously we're here in the Boston area, rock royalty, the Jay Giles Band. Chris Cornell was just 52.
Soundgarden
dude. I was never into Soundgarden.
I was.
Yeah.
And also his more recent solo work I liked mm-hmm. very much.
Greg Allman. Here's a big one. Greg Allman was 69 years old.
Was married to Cher at one
time. Yeah. Point. Isn't that weird?
Yeah. After Sunny, I believe.
Or? It must have been after Sunny. She was a child.
Yeah.
In the Sunny era. She was a kid when they hooked up, I think. Yeah.
I like the Allman Brothers.
Yeah, it's Southern Rock Night.
It's Southern Rock, yeah.
Around here.
Yeah, there are a lot of Allman Brothers songs that I like.
There is supposedly a fantastic live band. Michael Johnson was 72, and he had a hit song in 1978 called Bluer Than Blue.
I don't think I know that one.
Yeah, it's actually covered on that light rock compilation cover album that I'm such a fan of.
I probably heard that cover.
Somebody covers that on the Drink a Toast to Innocence album. I'm a fan of pop songs of that era. Chester Bennington was 41. Oh, this is the guy from Linkin Park.
Yes.
Yeah. This is another band way after my time that I could not name a single Linkin Park song. I don't know them. Do you know Linkin Park?
I do.
Do you like them?
Very, very, very depressing music.
Mm.
But there was a high-energy song called Faint by Linkin Park that I really, really liked. So if you're looking for a song to work out to, I highly recommend Faint.
It's one of those bands the kids enjoy. Oh, speaking of kids, Fresh Kid Ice was 53.
This Two is one Live Crew?
Yeah, wow, good call. You know your rappers.
Oh, well, the ones from the late 80s and 90s.
One of the founding members of Two Live Crew and the first prominent Asian rapper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Only 53. Goldie McJohn was the keyboardist in Steppenwolf.
I like Steppenwolf. It's another one of your hippie bands.
That's Born to be Wild.
Yeah.
It's Magic Carpet Ride.
Magic Carpet Ride.
That's all I know. It's as far as I go with Steppenwolf. Dave Hlubeck, I think, was 66. Guitarist in Molly Hatchet. Can you help us with this one? Our classic rock hippie band.
No, I'm sorry.
Okay. We got to look up April Wine. Go look up Molly Hatchet, because I don't know what they did. It's one of those band names I just know,
but
don't know what they did. Don Williams was 78. This was a country singer called the Gentle Giant of country music, but he had a pop hit. He had a weird, out-of-nowhere pop hit in 1980. A song called I Believe in You went to number 24, and I totally remember the song. I looked it up when I saw it on the list. Oh, man, I remember. It's like a goofy, slow, old-fashioned country song that somehow came creeping up the pop charts back in 1980. And it's a weird little song. Like you mentioned Superman.
Another country music Superman reference.
Yes, yeah, another one. Grant Hart was 56. Grant was part of Husker Du.
Okay.
One of those very influential alternative rock bands of the 80s out of back before they called it alternative rock,
right.
out of the Minneapolis scene, I believe. Gord Downie was 53 from the Tragically Hip.
Yeah, my friend Mike was a huge fan of Tragically Hip.
Well, that's a Canadian name if I ever heard one. Yeah. Gord Downie.
Yeah. Yeah, Tragically Hip didn't ever really break out of Canada into the U.S., but they were, you know, hugely popular in Canada.
Yeah. He was born with ice skates with a name like that.
Yeah.
Suit up. You're playing for the Maple Leafs. Scott Putski, I suppose, was 49. This was one of the founding members of Marilyn Manson.
Oh, wow.
He went by the name Daisy Berkowitz. Because, you know, they all have those goofy names in Marilyn Manson. Daisy Berkowitz. The Daisy comes from Daisy Duke.
I always thought Marilyn Manson was just the guy. And
it's both. Band. It's the guy and the band, I think. I never got into Marilyn Manson, but...
You didn't miss much.
George Young was 70 years old. He was a producer, worked with AC/DC and some other groups. He was Scottish. And he wrote another pop song of the late 70s that I remember very well. He wrote a song called Love Is in the Air. Remember that? That was on the radio all the time back then. And I kind of liked it.
Yes. I know what you
think. I think they used it in a commercial recently as well. I heard it recently. Chuck Mosley was 57. This was the original singer in Faith No More before Mike Patton.
Oh, Mike Patton's the only one I know.
Yeah, Faith No More was around for quite a while before Mike Patton joined. And they had their big breakthrough commercially, of course, with Epic. Their first two records were with this other guy, Chuck Mosley. Malcolm Young, of course, guitarist AC/DC. With AC/DC, was just 64. Older brother of Angus Young, also of AC/DC. I like AC/DC.
I like AC/DC. They're fun.
Where are we? Warren Pete Moore was 79, and this was one of the Miracles. As in Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, a childhood friend of Smokey Robinson, and co-writer of The Tracks of My Tears.
Oh, well, that's like one of the songs.
Yeah, one of the all-time great songs, absolutely. Tommy Keane was 59, and I thought you might know this guy being a... I know you're a big fan of power pop.
Yeah, you know what? I do have a collection of songs by him, and he came to my attention when I was listening to the power pop radio show Chocolate Cake out of Connecticut.
Says here is a longtime cult following among fans of power pop.
Yep.
And critical acclaim with his pioneering band, The Raz. I know you like your power pop.
Yeah, yeah.
Mitch Margaux was 70, and he was one of the Tokens, as in The Lion Sleeps Tonight.
Oh, and Lima Wet.
From Schoolhouse Rock, Victim of Gravity.
Yes.
That was the Tokens, right?
Yeah.
That's Mitch Margaux. Robert Popwell was 66, and he was a bassist with the Young Rascals.
Good Love.
Good Lovin'. Yeah, back in the 60s, Good Lovin', People Gotta Be Free, when they took their hippie turn, you know? They did some good stuff, though. I think I heard one of the Young Rascals on, maybe it was on Gilbert Gottfried's podcast, I heard one of them interviewed somewhere recently, Pat D'Anizio from the Smithereens.
Yeah.
We were just talking about them this past year.
Yeah, didn't they perform at a weird festival?
At the Headless Chicken.
The Headless Chicken Festival, yes.
And we were so excited because the Smithereens were performing there for free.
Yes.
Now we're never going to get to see the Smithereens at a Headless Chicken Festival, and I'm mad about it. I was trying to stay positive this whole podcast, and it's going to be the Smithereens that set me off.
They were good, the Smithereens. And last on the list for music, I have Glenn Campbell.
He obviously has been on the scene for years, but only came to my attention with Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Oh, wow. So, that's very recent.
Yes. There's the scene in Guardians of the Galaxy 2 where Rocket Raccoon is facing off with Yondu and his mob. And the song playing in the background is Southern Nights. And it's my favorite scene in the movie where there's explosions happening and all you see is the nighttime skyline and like half the crew blows up above the tree line and then drops and then the other half of the crew.
Yes.
And when he announced that he had Alzheimer's, he went on tour and there was a documentary made. So he ramped up his career for the final years of his life.
Yeah, he went on tour and his daughter, there were members of his family were part of the band and they'd help him through the songs and remembering how the set was going to go, and the lyrics and stuff.
I think we saw something about him on Sunday morning.
And things about his memory were going, but he could still play amazingly.
Yeah.
And I think the tour was called I'll Be Me.
Yeah, it was nice that he could do a big final tour. Rhinestone Cowboy was kind of his big iconic song, I think, but he did lots of stuff. And even before he was famous in his own right, he was a session guy. mm-hmm. back in the 60s. He played on Monkees Records, I believe. Cool. All right, that takes care of music. I'm so terrified that we're in danger of a record-breaking show length tonight. But let's keep going. All right, new category. New category, more coffee, let's go. This category is writers and artists and similar type people. And this is a much shorter category
than
the previous ones. Well, first of all, as a comic book guy, there's a lot of comic book people on this list. But Swamp Thing was created in the early 70s. You know, the character is Swamp Thing. Classic DC Comics character was created by writer Len Wein and artist Bernie Wrightson. And they both died this year.
Wow.
Yeah, Bernie died back in March. He was 68. And then Len died in the fall at 69. I've met both of these guys.
Oh,
so drink up.
Drink.
Yeah. I met Len Wein at, again, at San Diego Comic-Con mm-hmm. many years ago. Great writer. In addition to creating Swamp Thing, he also created Wolverine uh-huh. over at Marvel. So he did a lot of work at DC and at Marvel. One of the major forces in comics, certainly in the 70s and 80s. He was an editor as well. He edited New Teen Titans in the 80s. He was the editor of Watchmen. And Bernie Wrightson, in addition to Swamp Thing, just did gorgeous, detailed art and did a lot of horror comics. And he did a gorgeous black and white adaptation of Frankenstein that is just jaw-droppingly gorgeous artwork. He was absolutely one of the masters of comic art. So yeah, we got to recognize Bernie Wrightson and Len Wein. Joe Harris was 89. And Joe Harris, well, for one thing, created the Trix Rabbit.
Uh-huh.
And even came up with the tagline, Silly Rabbit Tricks Are for Kids. Because he's an advertising guy. Uh-huh. You know? But and more importantly, a co-founder of Total Television. This was the cartoon studio at which he also created Underdog.
Yeah.
And he created Tennessee Tuxedo. He created King Leonardo. He created Klondike Cat. Many of the major characters at Total Television all came from this guy, Joe Harris. Because I love all that Total Television stuff. Goofy old Underdog cartoons. Good stuff. Back in the world of comics, Dan Spiegel was 96. Great, great artist. This is a guy that could do it all. Like, he did superhero stuff. He could do drama, kind of crime comics. But also, he drew Scooby-Doo comics in the 70s. Mm-hmm. He could do that just as well. He did a lot, with Mark Evanier. They worked on stuff together, like Black Hawk, which was a war comic for DC. He drew Crossfire. Great cartoonist. Rich Buckler. I met Rich Buckler a couple of years ago. Yeah, you did too, actually. You probably don't remember. We walked up to Rich Buckler's table together at, I think, Rhode Island Comic Con.
I do remember that, actually.
Remember that?
Yeah.
What I remember from that conversation was that was after the recent Lone Ranger movie
mm-hmm.
came out with Johnny Depp in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I certainly didn't bring it up.
Right.
I went up to his table, and he started talking to us about the Lone Ranger movie and about how he really liked it.
Oh.
Like, he was angry about how other people didn't like it as much as he did. But he drew lots of comics for Marvel and DC, again, in that Bronze Age in the 70s and 80s. Created Deathlok over at Marvel. At DC, he did All-Star Squadron with Roy Thomas. So a lot of cool superhero work from him. William Peter Blatty was 89, and this was the guy that did the novel and the screenplay of The Exorcist in the 70s, among other things. Jack Mendelsohn was 90, another cartoonist, and did a lot of TV writing and movie writing over the years. He wrote Yellow Submarine, the Beatles cartoon movie.
Yeah.
Worked on the Ninja Turtles, worked on Laughing, and he did a weird comic strip a long time ago, like 50s, I guess, or 60s, called Jackie's Diary. It was drawn as if a little kid was drawing it.
Oh.
So he drew it this intentionally simple, like this is what it would look like for a kid to draw.
Oh.
Jackie's Diary. Yeah, good stuff.
Cute.
Jack Mendelsohn. Hal Gear was 100. And,
all right, he wins it.
Yeah, this is our current winner. I don't know if I have anybody else on the list that was in the triple digits. Did sound effects and film editing work for Warner Cartoons in the late 60s. And then they stopped making Warner Cartoons in the late 60s. But then when Warner transitioned to mostly TV work, he came along and he was a director on all the Warner Brothers Bugs Bunny cartoons mm-hmm. and stuff, all the TV projects through the 70s, Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Show, all the Bugs Bunny Christmas specials, when they started doing those weird movies like Daffy Duck's Fantastic Island, the Daffy Duck as Mr. Rourke parody. He worked on all that.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that was the theatrically released.
What?
Yeah, they made some weird Warner cartoon movies back then. They would stitch together a bunch of the old cartoons and then add some bridging sequences until it was movie length.
Yeah.
That's a bit. That was Hal. He was 100. Dave Hunt was 74, another comic book guy, an inker for DC Comics back in the day. Jay Lynch was 72, underground comics artist, and he was the main writer for Bazooka Joe Comics from 1967 to 1990.
As in the bubblegum?
Yes.
Wow.
The little comic strip that comes out with your pack of gum. And that means that I've read a lot of his work.
Yeah.
Because I spent a summer working for my town's park and recreation department. I was like Amy Poehler back then. And so I'd be raking up just trash and stuff in town playgrounds and parks, which would include a lot of Bazooka Joe wrappers. And I would read the comic strips.
You would pick them out and read them?
Yeah.
Wow.
The kids would not read them because I would just find that you could tell they were not even, they were never unfolded.
They would just, grab the gum out of it.
The kids just wanted the gum. They were not even reading the hilarious comic strips written by Jay Lynch. So one summer I read all of them.
All right.
Because it went into reruns. They came. Yeah. I reached a point where I could not find a new Bazooka Joe strip.
That's weird to me that kids would do that. I always read the comic when I had
the
gum.
You were the one. These kids where I lived.
I would read them too.
Those kids just wanted the gum. And they were litter bugs.
Stupid kids.
They were disgusting. Anyway, this guy, he also wrote for Topps Wacky Packages. He worked on the Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, yeah. I remember Wacky Packages. I've collected Wacky Packages.
And he worked for MAD. And I've got a few people here that worked for MAD. Jerry Gersten was 89. He worked for MAD, big caricaturist. Stan Hart was a writer for MAD, as well as the Carol Burnett Show. Barry Liebman also wrote for MAD. And let's see, Vic Lockman. This is a weird one. Vic Lockman was 90. Again, I learned about this guy from Mark Evanier. Vic Lockman wrote humor comics for everybody. He wrote for Disney, for Warner, for Walter Lantz, for Hanna-Barbera. He wrote for everybody in the 60s and 70s. He's arguably one of the most prolific comic book writers of all time. He wrote literally thousands of comic book stories.
Wow.
Later in life, he switched to just publishing his own Christian comics. He kind of like doing like those like weird Christian tract kind of comics like Jack Chick. He switched over into doing that kind of stuff. But quite a body of work. Flo Steinberg was 78. This was Stan Lee's assistant and / secretary / she ran the whole Marvel office back in the 60s. She was the one kept that whole place running back then in the glory days of Marvel Comics. Sam Glanzman was 92. Worked on Hercules, worked on Tarzan, did a bunch of war comics for DC. He was a World War II veteran, so he did like autobiographical war comics. Did the Haunted Tank for DC. Haunted Tank was a DC strip about a tank that was haunted.
Cool.
By like a Civil War veteran or something.
I was going to say, a tank of what?
Yeah, a tank.
Like army tank.
Army tank.
Army tank.
Not a water tank or a...
But it might have just been a tank top shirt.
But would it drive around and shoot people?
I think like there were just guys driving the tank, but then they would talk to a ghost that would just come along for the ride in the tank. It was the haunted tank.
Okay.
Bob Lovers was 95, also worked on Tarzan, The Saint, Lil Abner he assisted on, drew the Vigilante for DC, bunch of stuff like that. Dick Lotcher was 88. He drew Dick Tracy for many, many years. Also was an editorial cartoonist and worked on developing some of the McDonald's characters.
Mayor McCheese.
This guy may have worked on Mayor McCheese. We could only hope.
The McNuggets.
Xavier Atencio, perhaps, something like that, was 98. Was an artist for Disney and then became an Imagineer at the Disney theme parks.
Eat.
Wrote the script for Pirates of the Caribbean.
Wow.
Wrote the lyrics for the Yo-Ho, A Pirate's Life for Me song.
A little bit controversial, yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And you hear his voice in some of the attractions as well. He's the talking skull in Pirates of the Caribbean and also wrote for The Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
Basil Gogas, or something like that, was 88 and a magazine cover illustrator, worked on Famous Monsters of Filmland, so he did all the gorgeous paintings of all the monsters. Fran Hooper was 95, and I wasn't too familiar with her, but she was a comic book artist in the 40s, and there were not a lot of women drawing comic books in the 40s.
Sure.
So this is the very early days of comics, and she was working at the Fiction House. She drew Jean Martin, which was a spy series, Camilla, which was a Jungle Girl because every comic had a jungle girl.
Yeah.
And Mista of the Moon. Ooh, about a moon
that
woman.
That sounds interesting.
Yes, isn't that cool? She worked for several years. She was drawing comics back then. Jim Bakey was 77. This is a British cartoonist, and he worked a lot with Alan Moore. I know the stuff he did with Alan Moore, which included The First American, which was like a superhero, patriotic superhero parody strip they did in the early 2000s. It was part of the America's Best Comics line with Tom Strong, Promethea, and all that. Worked on a vigilante story with Alan Moore. And they did a story called Skiz in the early 80s, and that was about sort of a weird E.T. type of story about a kid that meets an alien.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool stuff. Great cartoonist. Finally, in this category, we have Robert Getchell, who was 81. And this is the guy, the screenwriter, who wrote Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, the mid-70s Ellen Burstyn movie. And he also created the Alice sitcom.
Cool.
Which I love.
Yes.
I know.
You know my hero was Linda Lavin.
Moment of silence, though, for that Trix bunny who's never going to get any cereal now.
Those stupid kids.
I always felt terrible for that rabbit.
I did, too. Why wouldn't they give them
cereal? Give them some Trix.
We have a wrestling category, but there's only four people in it this year.
They did well this year.
It was a good year for wrestlers, relatively speaking. So I just jotted down a few names that I recognized, including Ron Bass, the outlaw Ron Bass. Was like he wore a big black cowboy hat. He was like an evil, angry, big cowboy. Back in the 80s, I used to see him wrestle for the WWF back then. The outlaw Ron Bass was 68. And another Bass was Nicole Bass, and she was only 52. And I remember her, I knew about her from the Howard Stern show.
Oh.
She was actually part of Howard Stern's Whack Pack, as they called it. And just,
I didn't know he had a lady wrestler in there.
Yeah, Howard Stern's Whack Pack is just the crazy people that would hang around the show.
Yeah.
And we're called the Whack Pack. And Nicole, she billed herself as the world's largest female bodybuilder. And then she got into wrestling, and she was a regular on the Stern show, and she was a character.
Oh, right, I bet.
As you can imagine. Nicole Bass. Bobby the Brain Heenan was 72, and one of the big stars in the WWF back when I was paying attention in the 80s.
Yeah, well, 72 is a decent age for a wrestler.
For the wrestlers, absolutely. And he didn't do a lot of wrestling himself. He did some, but he was primarily a manager.
Okay.
Because he was funny. This is one of these sharp, funny guys. So he was a guy they would have do the talking, you know. But he was kind of a heel manager, you know, so he'd have the bad guy wrestlers in his stable. So he managed King Kong Bundy. He managed Jesse the Body Ventura at one point. Big John Studd, Ravishing Rick Rude, on and on it goes. He managed lots of crazy people at one point or another, including Andre the Giant, even when Andre turned bad in the mid-80s. Bobby was hooked up with Andre at one point. A very, very funny, entertaining guy, Bobby the Brain Heenan. And finally, for wrestlers, we have to end on George the Animal Steel. Was 79, and I met George the Animal Steel a few years ago, so drink up.
I'm out of coffee.
You got water there. Have some water. Multiple beverages. It's no excuse.
Have some respect for the animal.
Yes, have a sip of water for George the Animal Steel, who was such an entertainer. He played this part of just a maniac who could barely speak, just this dangerous, semi-coherent, crazy person. Got his green tongue, just a big, bald maniac, and was so convincing that when he appeared in Ed Wood, you know, speaking of Ed Wood with Martin Landau, George Steele played Tor Johnson, you know, who was a wrestler from back in the 50s that appeared in Plan 9 from Outer Space. It was weird seeing him in that movie, because like, what, can he do that? Is he capable? And of course he could, you know, the whole thing's an act all along, of course, but he was so convincing and never broke character when he was a wrestler that it was weird seeing him in that movie. It's like, how did they control him on the set?
He's an animal.
And then it was even weirder when I met him just a few years ago. Because now here's a perfectly reasonable, intelligent man sitting there and who's happy to just talk about his career. And he'd show you his broken thumb. He'd look, look at that. Look how my thumb bends. But he was a school teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Back in the early days of wrestling, like he'd teach half the year and then go out and wrestle half the year.
That must have been weird for his students.
They probably didn't even know. Easily one of my favorites back in the day, George the Animal Steel. All right, final page. The end is in sight. I have a page called Miscellaneous. So this is just where I threw a bunch of random weird people.
Okay.
So let's see what happens. Starting with Wally Pickle was 90. This is just a guy with an act. Wally Pickle could play multiple trumpets at the same time. He played two trumpets together, like harmonizing.
Oh.
And then he'd go up to three trumpets.
Whoa.
I watched him do this. I pulled up a video because I said, I've got to see how this works. So he'd have three trumpets taped together so that he could fit all three mouthpieces in his mouth.
Ooh.
And he would play three trumpets at the same time. He would only work the buttons on two of them.
Yeah, because he only got two hands.
Yeah, you're out of hands at that point. But he would play three trumpets at the same time. And in his younger days, he would play three trumpets while jumping on a pogo stick.
Can't keep that up forever.
That's an act.
Yeah.
And he still lived to 90.
He made it to 90. So he did this on The Tonight Show. Mm-hmm. He'd do all the variety shows.
Because I just have to wonder how many emergency room trips happened.
No, he was unstoppable. He was Wally Pickle. Joe Rogers was 97, and he was the founder of Waffle House, which I've never been to. Have you been to Waffle House?
I've never been to Waffle House.
Clank, have you been to Waffle House?
I drive by one every once in a while, and I think...
Where? Do they have one around here?
There's one in Tewksbury, so...
There's a Waffle House in Massachusetts?
Yes, in a small town up 495
yeah,
north.
Yeah, I know Tewksbury.
Tewksbury.
I know where it is, sort of.
Yeah.
They have a Waffle House?
Yeah. It's right near an IHOP, though, so I don't know how much business it gets.
Because I know you go down in the south,
right,
they're everywhere. But I've never been to one.
Yep.
Apparently, there is one within walking distance, relatively, of DragonCon.
Sure.
Because our friend Kat from the Strange Animals podcast, I know she has walked to Waffle House from DragonCon. I'm always reminded of Jim Gaffigan, because he used to do a long bit about Waffle House in his stand-up act, where he'd say, if you've never been to a Waffle House, just picture a gas station bathroom that sells waffles. So I've never been too desperate to track one down, but now I know there's one here in Massachusetts. That's bizarre. Anyway, Joe Rogers started the whole thing. Stanley Weston was 84, and he's considered, arguably, the inventor of the action figure.
Oh.
Co-creator of G.I. Joe, and also co-created Captain Action, which was another action figure line back in the 60s. Co-created the Thundercats, also.
Oh.
And I think there's people argue over who did what. You know, it's one of those kind of situations.
Yeah, sure.
But he was in the mix. Anyway, Stubbs was 20. Stubbs was the honorary mayor of Talkeetna, Alaska. And Stubbs was a cat.
That's a good long life for a cat.
Stubbs was a 20-year-old cat that was also the mayor of a town in Alaska.
Wow.
Yeah.
A cat mayor. That's
honorary
cool.
mayor.
Well, was there an actual mayor?
No. Okay. Everybody just listen to the cat. Here's one that I know Cornflake is familiar with, being a weather girl from these parts, and that's Dick Albert.
Dickie Albert.
Mm-hmm. Dick Albert's a legendary Boston weatherman.
Yeah, nice guy, too.
Yeah.
Did you meet him? I met him. Drink.
Okay. Is this the first one that you met?
I think so.
Possibly. It may be that I saw Tommy Page on stage. I think he might have opened for the New Kids on the Block.
I'll drink twice then.
I got to see a couple of Boston weatherman legends together at the, there is a weather conference, and I got to see Dick Albert and Harvey Leonard. I did not get to work with him personally, but
you saw him at your wild weather convention.
Yeah.
WeatherCon. Dick Albert was the Channel 5 in the Boston area, WCVB. He was their weatherman from 1978 to 2009.
He is a bit of a hero.
What a run. And I think he's from this area originally as well. So that's unusual in broadcasting that you get to work in your hometown. That usually involves a lot of traveling.
Sure.
But if you're going to be a weatherman for New England, you kind of, if you're going to succeed, you have to have grown up with the weather.
It helps to have grown up with this insane, horrifying weather that we're all suffering through for, and we can't figure out why. What's wrong with us? Why do we put up with this every year?
Yeah.
Marge Calhoun was 91. She was the first woman world champion surfer when she won the Makaha International Competition in Hawaii. So I just thought that was cool.
That is cool.
Surfing champion. Walter Guralnick was 100.
Another 100-year-old.
Yeah. I think I just threw him on the list because he's a local guy. But a 100-year-old dentist, a Boston-based dentist, helped launch dental insurance in Massachusetts.
Well,
that's cool. We have him to thank for dental insurance.
Yes.
Thank you.
Dean of the Harvard School of Dental Medicine and worked at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston for 65 years.
Amazing. That's
so
a good run.
Walter Guralnick, 100-year-old dentist. How about that? Ben Dorsey was 92. I just thought this was weird. He's a roadie. in the first person to be inducted into something that apparently exists called the Roadie Hall of Fame.
Oh, wow.
In Nashville in 2009. So he was a roadie for Hank Thompson, for Elvis Presley, for Johnny Cash, for Willie Nelson.
Well, I think you deserve to get into the Hall of Fame.
He's highlighted in the documentary, King of the Roadies. I haven't seen that one yet.
Sounds like we should.
Well, I bet it's pretty good. Jake LaMotta was 95. This was the boxer that was the inspiration for the movie Raging Bull, which I know I saw once long ago, but I barely remember.
That's one of the few Scorsese movies I haven't seen.
Yeah, I did see it once, and I forgot the whole thing. It's been too long. Everyone says it's like the greatest thing in the world.
Mm.
Oh, here's an interesting one. Flawless Sabrina was 78. What a name.
Yeah.
Flawless Sabrina was a drag queen and trans rights activist. She was making movies in the 60s.
Wow.
Had a cameo in Pink Flamingos.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
John Waters' early 70s, very crazy movie, which, yeah, featured Divine and other drag queens. But, yeah, very important in just raising awareness and getting out in front of people. And she was organizing drag queen pageants all over the U.S. So, interesting life, I thought. So,
yeah.
Wanted to throw, and what a name.
I like it.
Put Flawless Sabrina on the list. Norman Baker was 89. And, again, this is just one of those weird ones that caught my eye when I was going through the list. Because he was listed as an American explorer. And I thought, how many explorers are still around? Maybe none at this point. But I looked up Norman Baker, explorer. Yeah, it sounds like Ponce de Leon.
Yeah, you know, right.
Magellan.
How come we've not heard of this explorer, whereas we've heard of Lewis and Clark?
Yes. So Norman Baker went out with a Scandinavian explorer named Thor Heyerdahl in the late 60s, early 70s, one of their better-known expeditions. They built boats, like reed boats, they called them. They based these boats on ancient Egyptian designs to see if could it get from Africa across the Atlantic.
Oh.
So they actually set sail in this crazy little boat that they based on Egyptian drawings and from Morocco. And the first time they tried, the boat started filling up with water.
Oh.
And they had to be rescued. They tried again the following year, built a new boat, and they made it. They made it to Barbados.
Okay.
So they established that it was possible, based on those ancient Egyptian boats, to get across the Atlantic.
Sounds like to make one out of reeds, you must have had to have weaved it.
Here's the craziest part. Norman Baker, who was part of this expedition, keep in mind, he was 89 years old at the time of his death this past November. He didn't die of natural causes. He died because he was piloting a Cessna 172 and it crashed in Pittsfield, Vermont.
Oh.
So, yeah. That guy was full speed right up until the end.
Non-stop man.
How about that? Yeah, I thought that was interesting. Just to totally wrap up now, too, I've got two more names on the list. I just wanted to wind up with a couple of astronauts.
Yeah, we seem to be losing astronauts a couple of year now.
Yeah, there was a bunch of astronauts were on the list. I didn't list them all. I narrowed it down to two. And well, one of them's a cosmonaut, and that's Igor Volk was 79. He was a cosmonaut and also an inventor. That's the reason I thought this was interesting, is that just recently, in recent years, he was actively working on a flying car.
What?
Oh, nice.
Like, he was seriously designing a four-person flying car in his later years. So how about that? And the other astronaut here on the list is Eugene Cernan, who was 82. This is the last person to have walked on the moon. That was Apollo 17, 1972.
Yeah.
He was the last guy to step off the moon, I guess. He also holds the unofficial lunar land speed record, which is 11.2 miles an hour.
I wonder if the moon is lonely, because we haven't visited it
It's been so long since we've been to the moon, but it was Eugene Cernan who was the last guy to walk on the moon and the fastest driver on the moon.
Either that or the moon is like, I think I've finally gotten them off my back for good.
Yeah, the moon's probably better off without us.
I'm sad there's never been a woman on the moon.
Yeah, so we'll have to work on that. We're going to go back to the moon.
Yes.
We'll bring women this time. We'll stop briefly on the moon, and then on to Mars.
On to Mars to find Robillard.
Gotta find Robillard.
See if he's still getting his supply of Earth fruit.
Yes.
We'll be sure to pack some Earth fruit. All right, well, hey, that's it. That's the memorial show, looking back on 2017.
And that's more than enough.
It was way too long, as usual. And this is the pared down list. Yeah. I was cutting people off this list.
Sure.
Just so that we wouldn't be here all night.
It's only people who are of some interest to us or our listeners.
Yeah, it's hard to even get it down that short. So I know we missed a lot of people. We skipped some people. If any listeners, did we skip someone that you wanted to recognize? Let us know. We'd love to hear from you. I know we always get some feedback on the memorial show, but wow, that went on so long, and I'm kind of glad it's over until next year.
Oh, me too.
Or till Dragon Con.
Yeah.
Because I do this at the midway point of the year as well. We do a live version of Dragon Con.
I don't envy you.
Right, you got to put PowerPoint together for that.
We had visuals for the Dragon Con version this year, this past year.
So yeah.
That was cool. We'll have to do that again if we can this year. Anyway, Cornflake, please... Please get us out of here.
Sure thing. You can tweet at us. We're at Flopcast on Twitter. And we're on Facebook, if that's more your speed, facebook.com/Flopcast. We're on Instagram, too, the_Flopcast. And we have our very own website, flopcast.net.
Yes. And all right. Well, assuming we've successfully survived this long, long, long memorial show, we'll see you next week. Because you know what's coming up next week?
Episodes. 300.
Flopcast episode 300. And best of all, we have nothing planned in particular. So hopefully, if nothing else, I look forward to a shorter show next week to celebrate 300 episodes.
Good plan.
Yes, we'll see you there.
Peace and cookies.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And we're going to watch every episode of Doctor Who and then talk to you about it.
Every episode?
Every single one.
In order?
From an unearthly child to, you know, the future. And we're going to do it in a podcast that we call...
The Watchathon of Rassilon.
WatchaRassilon.com. And we're also a part of the ESO Network. So check us out or whatever.
Please.
Stay Rassil Awesome.
Stop trying to make Rassil Awesome a thing.
Nope.
All right, secret after show. Now, we've got to keep this short because I think this show's been long enough already.
True.
This will be a very short, even for the secret after show, we'll keep it short. I thought for the secret after show, let's now list everyone who is still alive.
I thought we were going to sing Precious and Few by Climax.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Ready?
Yeah, start really low, and then we're going to keep going up a key, and we'll do that like 11 times.
I can't do it.
Cornflake, is your Valentine offer still in effect?
It is.
Is it too late for people to get in on this, or should we offer it one more time?
Let's offer it one more time, but hurry.
This is it.
And if you're new to The Secret Show, you should know that in our most recent episode prior to this, 298, I let folks know that if you would like a Valentine from the Flopcast, I am happy to send one your way. All you need to do is go to flopcast.net. You'll find our email address there. It's info@flopcast.net. And send us your mailing address. Not your email, your actual mailing address.
You're going to send an actual piece of mail.
I am.
Physical thing that exists in the real world.
An actual Valentine.
Wow. What's the deadline, Cornflake, for people emailing us their actual mailing address?
The sooner the better, but... Let's go right up till February 8th.
Thursday, February 8th.
After that, all bets are off.
That's the deadline.
And I'm already excited that I have a few to send.
Some people have sent an address to us already.
And I think it can be a little weird to say, sure, I'd like a Valentine, because normally you don't ask for them, but there's no other way for me to know that you want one. So so don't be shy. I love sending Valentine's.
Yes. And again, as a reminder, what I love about this plan is that I don't have to do anything.
It's one of those rare occasions. I don't know if our listeners know this, but you carry the ball for so many things. It's nice that I'm actually doing something for a change.
I'm just going to collapse and relax because, especially after this memorial show, I'm so sleepy right now.
Yeah.
So, all right, Cornflake's in charge of Valentine's. I'm in charge of nothing. Good night.
Bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.